Can you hear?
I think you need to have the mic close to you. I want to make sure that folks online can hear us.
Can you hear us?
Operator, can you hear us? Operator, can you hear us? We're going to start the hearing in a moment. We need a number of people signing in.
If you'd like to give it to us, we'll put it on our website. So it'll become part of the public record.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that after you've done the
perfect.
How you doing?
How are you? Call our session to order. My name is Nate Treadwell. I'm Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, and this is a hearing, a public hearing on Ballot Measure 2, an act to tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana. And before we get the hearing started, let me just explain a little bit about the background of these hearings. In 2010, the Alaska State Legislature passed a law that said when a ballot initiative goes out on the ballot, the Lieutenant Governor should hold hearings in two cities in each of the state's four judicial districts. This is hearing number six that we've had on marijuana. We've been in Northwest Alaska. We've been in Arctic Alaska. We've been in Southeast Alaska. We had a hearing in Anchorage the other day. And the hearings have been actually very helpful. And they've been helpful for three reasons. The first thing is that it gives you a chance because you're legislators. If you are actually the lawmakers in this case, it gives you a chance to hear and understand the bill. And as you know, we've seen a number of people in public office criticized lately for voting on things they hadn't read. So you're here to read and understand the bill, and that's pretty important. The second thing is that there are some questions that this bill and any complicated bill will bring up. And we have a chance to ask the sponsors what their intent was when they did something. And we'll hear some of those kinds of questions today. And then the third thing is it gives you a chance to convince others of your point of view, whether to vote for this bill or vote against this bill. And that's a very important part of the process, too, of lawmaking. Now, there's one ground rule that I have for today's hearing and that I think we should all have in public life, which is to make sure that we maintain respect for one another. I'm going to tell you that there are people here who believe that marijuana has no bad health effects whatsoever. There are also people here who believe that marijuana does have some bad health effects. You will hear responsible people from both sides advocate what they believe they know. We have invited doctors and others to put their feelings, their studies, the things they cite on our website, and that's available for you to read. But it really is not in order for somebody to question somebody's motives, to question somebody's science, except by raising your hand, seeking recognition. And if you do have a question for one of the speakers, given the time allowed, we may try to recognize you. In some cases, we'll have to move on, and I'll try to do this as impartially as possible as I have throughout these hearings. But this is not really a place for public outbursts. It's not really for a place for cussing. It's not really a place for impugning other people's motives. We're all responsible citizens here, and we have a very important decision to make in November. So with that, I'd like to ask you to follow that general ground rule so that the news maybe about this hearing is not about how raucous we were, but about how educated we became. And for that, I want to thank you for coming to be involved today. What I'm going to do here on today's agenda is I'm going to go through this proposed bill. And this proposed bill will give you a summary of the bill, will give you a sectional analysis of the bill that happens at almost any legislative hearing when a bill is introduced. And then we'll talk about the cost estimate for the bill. And then we're going to have the proponents of the bill speak for 10 minutes about why they believe this bill should become law. And then we're going to have an opponent speak for 10 minutes about why this bill should not become law. And then we're going to open it up to you. And while we do this, we also have a set of experts online of people from state agencies who will have to be part of implementing this bill if it becomes law. And some of those people are hired by all of us to protect our public health. Some of those people are hired by all of us to protect our public safety. Some of those people are hired by all of us to make sure that our liquor stores or the sale of liquor is done safely in the state. And so they will be available to answer questions about how they would implement this bill, and you as legislators, as citizen legislators, will have the right to ask them those questions. The other thing I'd like to say is that we have a public record of this and all of our hearings on the initiatives this fall that you can find easily on the web at notice.alaska.gov. And so if you have a study that you'd like us to put up there on one side or another of the issue, send it to us at PSUM comments, P-S-U-M. I still haven't figured out how we name these things, but P-S-U-M comments at alaska.gov.
Possession, Sale, and Use of Marijuana, P-S-U-M.
Thank you, Cameron. And we will get your comments also up online, assuming, A, that they're civil, and, B, that they don't impinge on somebody else's privacy. And with that, let me just go through the slideshow very quickly. This is a bill which could tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. It would make the use of marijuana legal for a person 21 or older, allowing them to possess, use, display, purchase, or transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana. It would impose various restrictions on personal cultivation, public use, and operation of marijuana-related facilities. It would allow the legislature to create a marijuana control board in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and it imposes an excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana and provides for the enforcement and administration of that tax. That's the bill summary. Now let me go through it section by section fairly quickly. Section 1 adds a new chapter, Alaska Statute 17.38, Regulation of Marijuana, to the Alaska Statutes. And if you'd like to read the entire bill, which I'd encourage you to do, it's on the table in the back. The statute would require or would provide that the production and sale of marijuana should be regulated and taxed such that businesses could sell marijuana and that such sale could be conducted in a manner that protects consumers and promotes public health and safety. The statute would limit the use, sale, growth, and transport of marijuana to individuals who are 21 years of age or older and imposes penalties for public consumption. The statute would allow for the creation of a marijuana control board while still allowing for local government to make decisions regarding its use and regulation. Section 2 of the bill adds a new chapter, Alaska Statutes 43.61, an excise tax on marijuana to the Alaska Statutes. And this statute would impose a $50 per ounce excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a marijuana cultivation facility, the producer, to a retail marijuana store, distributor, or a marijuana product manufacturing facility. The producer would be responsible for paying the tax. Monthly tax payments would be required by the Department of Revenue from each marijuana cultivation facility. And if these taxes were not paid, the facility would be subject to civil penalties under Alaska Statute 43.05.220. Now, what happens here is this plus two other hearings will be part of the process, and there's lots of other information out there some through the government sites, some through private sites, and you will get to vote on this in early November. We certify the election results, whether it's yes or no, probably about 2 weeks after that. The bill would become law if there are enough votes, and it would become effective in February of the following year, for 90 days after certification. I say February, that's assuming that we certify in November. There have been elections where we've certified late in the year. It is not subject to veto, and it may not be repealed by the legislature within 2 years of its effective date. And that's according to Article 11 of the Constitution. And although the legislature may amend an initiative during any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years cannot operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or vitiate the intent. And that's one reason why it's so important in today's hearing and these other hearings to understand clearly what the intent of the law is that you're voting on. Now, the other thing that the law requires us to do in our office is to work with our Office of Management and Budget in the state capitol to develop a cost estimate for the bill. And the cost estimate is also a lengthy document, which is on the back table, and I'd encourage you to read it. The Department of Revenue says that they would need to create at least three new positions to oversee the new excise tax. Their estimated recurring annual cost for this is $300,000. Contractual services, the Department of Revenue estimates it would need a one-time expense of probably $500,000. It could be as low as $350,000, as high as $500,000, to configure their tax revenue management systems. And so for the first year, they estimate $650,000 to $800,000 as additional cost to the state. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development would have the responsibility if the initiative passes for controlling marijuana through the ABC board, which is in the department, and until or less than a marijuana control board is established by the legislature. And as was done with Colorado, the department recommends creating a task force to identify legal, policy, and procedural issues that need to be resolved. And from creating a database to purchasing vehicles, the estimated cost to create a task force is $1.5 million for the first year and $1.4 million for the second year, so a first-year estimate of $1.5 million. Other departments in state government that would have potential cost increases include the Department of Health and Social Services with an estimate of $0 to $2.9 million, the Department of Public Safety with an estimate of $1.4 million, the Department of Environmental Conservation with an estimate of $136,000, and the University of Alaska, they could not put a number on some of the costs that they would have to deal with, many of which relate to federal regulations on college campuses and drug use. So that's the cost estimate of the bill, and I will just say this because it has been an issue in the newspapers. We did not provide a revenue estimate on this because we don't provide speculative information. We don't know how many Alaskans use marijuana regularly, how many more or less would use it if it's legalized, how much they would use. There's very many different estimates. In Colorado, there's been a question of how much has come through the legal system as opposed to how much is outside the system and stays in the black market. And so it wasn't a political choice by the governor or our office not to do this. We just have not done this with other initiatives either. Where it's very speculative, we leave that up to the arguments pro and con on this. Obviously, with a $50 per ounce tax, there would be some revenue collected, and the amount of that tax, you'll hear in the presentations, has got several different estimates, so we'll leave that up to the public. With that, what I'd like to do is invite Bruce Schulte for the sponsor group to speak to the bill, and Bruce, you've got 10 minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Schulte. I'm a co-chair of the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. The current estimates put the percentage of Alaskans currently consuming marijuana at roughly 16%. And that means that right now, over 115,000 Alaskans choose to consume marijuana under current laws. That also means that there exists today a black market industry that is supplying the product that those Alaskans are consuming. Depending on the average annual consumption and the retail prices applied to that, That equates to a black market industry of roughly $50 to $80 million annually. That's an industry that is entirely unregulated, untaxed, and unchecked. Now, the obvious conclusion that one could draw from that is marijuana prohibition doesn't work. We've got 115,000 people who can attest to that, and it never did. Marijuana is more available to underage consumers than alcohol. That's true today. It was true when I was in high school some decades ago. That hasn't changed, and the main reason for that is that alcohol regulation has made it more difficult for those under 21 to buy alcohol, whereas people that are selling weed to youngsters are not asking for ID. There is absolutely no incentive for them to do so. Ballot measure 2 will create the incentive by allowing a legitimate marijuana industry with sensible restrictions. Those 115,000 consumers are not likely to change their behavior whether Prop 2 passes or not. If they consume responsibly now, they're likely to continue to do so. If they're on a drug testing program, as I am, that will not change. They will still get tested. They will choose to not consume, as I do, because that's a condition of their employment. If they're inclined to consume in their own home, they will continue to do so. Passage of ballot measure 2 will not appreciably change the habits of those 115,000 people. But it will apply restrictions on what legitimate growers and retailers can do and who they can sell to. Now, we've heard concerns about workplace use, and I share those concerns. As I said, I'm on a drug program myself, so I choose not to consume marijuana. Certain safety-related industries should drug test, and ballot measure 2 maintains their ability to do so. That's not going to change an employer's ability. That's an agreement between the employer and the employee, and that will not be changed. I just believe that others should be able to make that choice for themselves. Now, we've heard ballot measure 2 characterized as extreme. I have yet to hear any characterization of what extreme really means. I've read the text of ballot measure 2. There's nothing extreme, in my opinion, about that. It does provide, as Lieutenant Governor mentioned, it makes specific provisions for marijuana control board to be set up, to set guidelines for packaging, labeling, concentration, and marketing. All the things, all the horror stories that we're hearing out in Colorado, are considered in ballot measure 2, and there's an opportunity for sensible rules to address all of them. All the things that reasonable adults would agree should be part of a legitimate marijuana industry can be addressed in the rulemaking process. The folks who would participate in such an industry have absolutely no interest in marketing marijuana products to kids. I mean, the prospect of marketing gummy bears laced with THC to kids is ridiculous. The people who did that in Colorado were ostracized by their peers, and those products were pulled almost immediately. The folks that I've talked to who would be involved in this industry, Alaskan entrepreneurs and business people, have absolutely no interest in seeing that happen. Under ballot measure 2, local municipalities and boroughs will retain the option to apply their own guidelines and taxes on marijuana, so that I think that addresses some of the concerns of some of the outlying communities, some of the Bush communities where substance abuse is an issue. I would just add that substance abuse tends to be alcohol, inhalant, prescription drugs, and others. Marijuana is by far the lesser problem. That would be my concern anyway. So when we talk about ballot measure 2, we're not talking about whether a marijuana industry should exist in Alaska. It already does. It's here, and it's not going anywhere. The question before the voters in November is simply, shall we continue to have a completely unregulated marijuana industry, which is available to all ages, and completely unchecked, unregulated, unmonitored, or should we instead have a regulated marijuana industry for adults 21 and over, sensible guidelines on packaging, labeling, and marketing? Thank you.
First, thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Cordero. I am the campaign manager of the Big Marijuana Big Mistake Hotel on Q. I work for that group. I'm actually based staff. And so I do have an accent. I'm an immigrant, a naturalized citizen, so I will try to speak as clearly as I can so all of you can understand me. I'm a resident of MAP 2. My wife was born and raised here. She's a public school teacher, and I'm a two-term former master's program member. So I'm glad to be here today. Next slide. Our campaign, the grassroots campaign, made out of a group of over 30 individuals around the state. Our campaign chair is Mr. Mike Williams, and Elder from Antioch, who is also known as the famous dog master. He was killed, but he's still a Jewish doing that today. Our campaign has people from all professions, from all ethnicities, from all political ideologies. We have folks that are retired, students, a little bit of everything from everywhere in Alaska. So it's not just one person. It's not me. It's a group that opposes the legalization of marijuana in Alaska. Next slide, please. Proponents of this measure continue to say that this is a grassroots proposition that will be those 45,000 Alaskans signed the petition. But I was asked to sign the petition, and I was told that this was for medical marijuana use. I was told that this was for industrializing and commercializing, not just the plant, but the derivatives that can come off that plant that can also be dangerous. So people thought that it was for decriminalizing, which is very different also from medical or industrializing. So there are three items that are mixed into this measure that have created a lot of concern. There are people that advocate exclusively for medical use. There are people that advocate exclusively for making sure that people are not voluntarily incarcerated for minor possession, and there are people who just want to use it for recreation. And the groups that are listed there have officially come out against violent measures too because of their own concerns. Some of them for reasons that have to do with workplace, some of them for reasons that have to do with faith. Some of the solutions that have to do with children and the availability of a product that would become even more available. Next slide. Proponents are receiving most of their funding from an outside organization called the Marijuana Policy Trust. It is a national nonprofit. However, nonprofit doesn't mean charity. It can be a nonprofit that is designed. That promotes recreational marijuana, that promotes the use of marijuana as a less harmful substance that somehow would substitute the use of alcohol. Over $700,000 that we know of, based on Alaska Public Office Commission numbers, has been donated either cash or in kind to this campaign. Strategist 360 is the Seattle-based public relations firm that was hired, contracted to do local work. Just like our campaign contracted the local Alaskan CRFR to do some of the work. But they are not the candidates, not the campaign. Next slide, please. Actually, don't get this one clearly. Why is there such concern? Marijuana for many people is just the notion of the woods of marijuana. People smoke that joint, doing that, listening to the Grateful Dead or Jimi Hendrix. That's about it. But the marijuana of 2014 is not the same anymore. The levels of THC back in the 70s were probably 1% among plants. That has been changed over the years. Now I've got plants in growth. No, I'm serious, through engineering, just like our tomatoes or apples. But the levels of THC in products today can go from 40% all the way to 80% if they're edible. There are products that are being advertised in Colorado with those THC levels. There are items that most of us and most people that are opposing this measure that are having unheard of. Next slide. Concentrates such as green crack, butane hash oil, actual capsules, butter, and shatter. Those are byproducts that can be created through the plant that can increase the amount of THC for people to use for recreational purposes. So some of these products are no longer have a medical purpose, but mainly just for recreation and people getting extra high. way that some of these products are created, it's like candy things. In 2013 in Colorado, there were several explosions. According to law enforcement, those explosions have doubled in the first 6 months of this. The source that we usually cite comes from a report from a task force called the Rocky Mountain High Institute. This is an organization that was put together by the U.S. Office of Drugs from the White House. And it is a multi-state, multi-agency, multi-year report that has looked at the trends of marijuana legalization in Colorado from medical marijuana legalization to recreational marijuana for the first. This is data from law enforcement, emergency services, hospitals, and regular news, and also from peer-reviewed research. And some of the things that this data contains talk about increase in teen usage since legalization became an issue in Colorado, since medical legalization and then recreational legalization. They're talking about a 3% increase of youth usage in comparison to the national average of 70%. So in Colorado, the percentage is 10%. Now, again, this is coming from law enforcement. School districts are reporting more expulsions and more suspensions. The proponents of the bill have been using data from an optional survey that is done every other year with school districts that gets the two largest counties in Colorado. So it's not necessarily accurate to use that survey across the whole state. It doesn't show data that law enforcement or emergency men are providing the test. Next slide, please. To say that regulating marijuana will stop availability to minors is like right now with alcohol. We know that minors are getting alcohol through the black market, through people that buy it for them. So irresponsible adults that provide those beverages to them. According to the Rocky Mountains report, 25% of marijuana and marijuana products that youth in Colorado are using are being purchased by friends or relatives in one of the new legal stores. And there are new ways for students to bring these items to school, either through day tests or new highlighters, and teachers are unaware of it. In fact, there's a case in one of our public schools in which it's just, they have gotten into trouble for one of those highlights. Next slide, please. My friend Bruce mentioned that there's a 9-month regulation period in which they could make sure that things like this don't happen. But there was a regulation period in Colorado, there was a regulation period in Washington, and that did not stop the packaging of items like this that can attract or confuse children. When the language of the measure says that there can be reasonable advertising restrictions, that word reasonable is what should concern us. So that's going to have lawyers going back and forth to determine what reasonable means. If you open a business, you expect to make a profit out of it. You expect to make a profit out of more sales, out of more consumers. You expect to be able to advertise your product. So when that language becomes law, if it passes, that becomes statute. Statute is the law that regulators have to look at. Regulation cannot contradict statute. So I'm sure that a lot of regulators would like to do that all the time, but unfortunately that's not the case. So please keep that in mind. Reasonable restrictions in advertisement must be banned. At previous presentations, the proponents have said that this will be entirely banned. I don't know how they have to say that if the language of the measure says reasonable. Next slide, please. Okay. So let's just go to a slide that says regulate marijuana like alcohol. In Alaska, In Alaska, our current alcohol laws permit local villages and local communities to completely be dry from alcohol. While this law may actually permit a local community from stopping socializing or opening shops, it would not permit the village that is dry to have importation, transportation, or the sharing of products on like alcohol. So this is to be regulated like alcohol. This measure does not allow for that. And there is a lot of concern on that in that regard. So I'm going to end with that, and I would just appreciate that you visited our website for additional details.
Thank you. We have close to 8.5 of people who signed up to testify. Before we do that, let me remind you that we have a number of people online who are experts in the state or people in the state agencies who will be implementing. And your role as a legislator is not just to testify, but to have the right to ask questions of the proponents or the opponents of the experts online. Dennis Casanovas, the major state troopers, is online. Dr. World Herbert, the Department of Health and Social Services, the state chief medical officer, is online. Kim Stryker with the Food Safety Commission at the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is online. Brandon Spanos with the Tax Division, Department of Revenue, is online. Sherry Daigle, Sherry, I hope I have not pronounced your name. Corrections. It's online. Some people have had questions about how many people are incarcerated for marijuana offenses. Michaela Fowler at the Department of Commerce, which would oversee the regulation for this product. Diane Casto at the Department of Health and Social Services. And Bob Beasley, who heads the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, is online. So if you have the opportunity here, not only to state your piece of your testimony, but if you have questions for any of these state agencies, folks, be sure to raise your question. With that, I'd like to invite Samantha Jones forward to give her testimony if you'd like to speak. Samantha, are you online?
Lieutenant Governor, this is Brandon Spanos with Department of Revenue. I just want to note that I'm personally having a really hard time hearing what's being said. I'm wondering if others aren't as well.
This is Ryan Lasher. I'm online to testify. I'm also having a very hard time.
As am I, Diane Casto.
All right. So what we're
going to
do is this: we've got a PA system here, and you're on one of the best speaker systems that you have, and it's you're close to all three mics, so I'll just try to move them closer. Can you hear us now?
Yes, that's a bit better.
All right, we'll try to be cognizant of the fact that there. Cameron, I'm going to switch places. Okay, thanks. Is David Diaz here? Okay, Mark Fish.
My name is, let me make sure this is on. Okay, my name is Mark Fish. I'm from Big Thicken. I really don't like this. I don't like either side. One thing we're missing, I think, in conversation today is what is the law right now? There's a lot of people I talk to say, well, why are we doing this? Marijuana is legal already in Alaska. Well, that's not quite true. So I pulled up the Alaska laws, and there's a few things that I'm looking at here. Less than an ounce is a misdemeanor that can get you 90 days and a $2,000 fine. Yeah. 4 ounces can get you a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And I could go on with intent to distribute, sale, and call evasion. But there's one more that kind of shocks me is this one. Cultivation to a person cannot under 19 was 3 years or more than, or younger than the seller. It's 10 years, it's a felony, 10 years in jail, and $100,000 fine. If I was 21 and passed a joint to my 18-year-old brother, I could be a convicted felon for 10 years and $100,000 fine. You know, we talk about extreme measures. I think the extreme measures that we have now in Alaska statutes is intolerable. And some people might say, well, there's only four people in jail for marijuana charges. It's no big deal. What happens when our law enforcement or our attorney general's office decides to enforce to the letter of the law? Do we want that kind of arbitrary power invested in our system? I think not. And true, you know, I'm a libertarian. I see a lot wrong with the statute as or the initiative as brought forward that I would like to change. But I'm voting for it because I see it as a starting point where we can make those changes. There's nothing says that our legislature can't go in and fix whatever the people think is wrong with this after it's enacted. It's an ongoing process. And there's some that says that we should, well, you know, we can wait and do it later. You know, the last time the legislature looked at this, they criminalized it again after the Reagan decision. Made a public possession of an ounce a crime. They did it for highway funds. They put it in front of the voters and said, we're going to lose money if you don't make this a crime. So with that blackmail, we changed the policy that was actually working. So in conclusion, what I want to say is simply I don't like the way it is now worse than I don't like the way that we would change it. Because the way we change it is to get it in the regulatory process where we, the public, and our elected officials can actually start the conversation and move the ball towards a better future. Thank you.
Going to call Lily Harik. Lily, or I mispronounced your name, I apologize. Is that a G or a Q?
Welcome. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Please speak closer to the mic if you can.
I'm myself leaving very tired of being the best ally to the cartels because of American policy and their procedures dealing with the drugs and issues in our country. By keeping it illegal, the cartels have quite a blow in our state, in our forests, and in the money that's being made. I think that after 40 years of failed policy, it's time to move on. We need to get a better handle, and our grandparents are a lot smarter. They got to refill the prohibition in a lot sooner time. They had problems in the beginning, but they got a handle on it. And you can't legislate morality. We just need to back up, be responsible, take responsibility. I think this is a business that is a boon to Alaska, and I can see ourselves going and being first in a lot of issues. Not just people get caught, but is huge water policy. Israel had a breakthrough where they were able to disconnect the power of being high as to the medical possibility. That helped children be issues. We lost that opportunity because we can't do good medical stuff. That's why we're at the back, and that's why the cartels are at the front. It would be nice to see a last first and us having some policies that we regulate our children's kids and give them a better future than what they're getting right now. Come on, 40 years. Thank you.
Thank you,
Lilly, I'd like to invite Ron Peterson forward, and Angel McCabe is on deck.
My memory's bad, so I'm going to use my smartphone. I respectfully agree with the two folks that spoke previously before me. Oh, yeah, my name is Ronald Peterson. I've been in Alaska since 82. The marijuana grown in the valley is world famous. This is a world famous location, a world famous marketplace. I heard about it long before I moved to the state in 1982. I agree that the draconian marijuana laws, they suck. They're hard on families, they're hard on everybody. Cartels. I don't trust government. I believe that once government is in charge of the marijuana, that's when the cartels will move in, just like the banks have moved into government in Washington, D.C. You know, if somebody's going to regulate your business, organized crime is going to take control of that business and go ahead and roll into government. Now, when I look at it, I don't see a grower who's going to be able to have the ability, they hire these bud trimmers to come in and trim their buds. Those kids, they just reach out and they just grab a little pot and they smoke it. Well, that's all going to end because those kids will become known as tax cheats. If you're a marijuana grower right now and you're in your own garden, you're going to have regulators. They're going to be counting your plant. They're going to be adding it up. They're going to be telling you what to do and what you can't do. It's going to be highly intrusive into the garden because if you're a grower, they're not going to let you smoke that pot. You're beating the tax. Okay, I don't see marijuana legalization happening here. All I see this is what it says straight up. This is an act to tax. Now, I'm a smaller, less government kind of guy. That's right, I'm not a progressive. Though I'd like to think a lot of my ideas are progressive, but I'm just not a progressive. And, I saw in the newspaper some gal named Green, she was talking, I think that's who it was, let's follow the money. Yeah, okay, let's follow the money. Who's getting money? Oh, the state of Alaska. Oh, who's short of money? Oh, the state of Alaska. Well, I doubt if there's any real connection there. You know, government doesn't have any plan. And the bureaucracy that's going to be created, why, they're probably going to build a building this size, you know, up with all of the $1 million that's Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell showed, you're going to be hiring bureaucrats, you know, what the progressives like to call good-paying middle-class jobs, to go out and do what? Harass people who are engaging what they've always engaged in out here in the valley. Up and down the streets of Wasilla, I don't have enough hands to count all the businesses that have stayed alive from growing weed. I mean, everybody says, oh, the judges all know it. You know, that's why they all go so easy on you. Well, now let's take it further. Let's look at this far side. Okay, let me wrap it up. I just want to get into the international quality of it. Once the contiguous states are all legal to grow marijuana, well, I guess the government will just turn their back and allow the interstate transport of marijuana from state to state. Well, when that happens, who's going to hop in? Monsanto. And all you farmers out there that are buying lights, keeping things warm and everything, you're going to get beat out of business by a huge agriculture business that's going to be growing all the pot in Texas and Kentucky. And that's going to suck. All the money that's been generated from this world-famous marijuana growing neighborhood to wherever the people who own Monsanto. Thank you. So thank you.
Thank you. Hi, thank you. I would like to address big marijuana, big mistake, and falsifications, omissions, and exaggerations we've been peddling for 500 supporters. First off, your name alone makes no sense. Big marijuana means a big multi-million-dollar national corporation. What we are testing here is local legalization and creating hundreds of jobs locally. Also, you're implying that MPP is big marijuana, and actually they're a nonprofit organization working solely on marijuana policy reform. They have no involvement in sale distribution or any other part of the marijuana industry and stand to gain nothing from legalization. We call Alaska a pawn in their grand scheme, and we call ourselves a stepping stone towards the common majority national movement. If you're looking for big marijuana, then look no further than our own government. The U.S. government holds 2 patents for medical applications for marijuana, but yet schedules marijuana in the same class as heroin, claiming no medical value. But you know what has medical value and is legal? Prescription pain medication. Let me tell you that I have lost 3 family members to opiate addiction. They started out on pain pills because they were legal and prescribed them. When they started abusing them, snorting them, smoking them, shooting them up, the doctors kept fueling their addiction. When they couldn't get pain pills from doctors, they'd get them from the street. When the streets didn't have pills, at least one of them started using heroin. Pain pills and heroin turned these people into monsters, lying, stealing, abusive shells of the people that they were. In fact, if any of you have ever been a victim of property theft or even with a pet dog here in the valley, I'm sure it was tied to at least one of them. Oh, and the best part is when they start going through withdrawals, they get to get set up on methadone, supposedly to wean themselves off. But there are people that have been on it for years. We have special methadone clinics for these heroin addicts that are literally destroying themselves, but we can't get a legal dispensary for adults to an herb in its natural form. By the way, when I asked these prescription pain addicts why they never use marijuana instead, their answers were, because marijuana is an illegal drug. I've never seen a pothead steal to fund their addiction. I've never seen a pothead need years of medical treatment and therapeutic play. I've never seen a pothead not be able to work because they were constantly either high or dosed. I'm running out of time, but I would like to say that anyone that is opposed to this law is not a true Alaskan. Because ask any real Alaskan, and they will tell you that the sole thing that we strive for in this greatest state is the freedom and protection of our rights. Even if you are against marijuana as a personal choice, you should be for freedom. This is a waste of time for law enforcement when any real Alaskan knows the real problems up here are alcoholism, sexual abuse, and the influx of imported hard drugs that are destroying Alaskans and funneling Alaska money out of the state. Prohibition doesn't work. Education is what works. You cannot legislate morality.
Would both side or the con side like to respond to questions raised or statements?
I want to make a comment on Mr. Peterson's observations, if I may. The libertarian in me agrees with you that, you know, completely unregulated, untaxed climate might be intellectually more attractive, but I don't see us getting there. You know, we've had many, many decades of prohibition. I see ballot measure 2 as a reasonable compromise. You know, folks that are opposed to it have legitimate concerns. You know, access of kids and, you know, marketing and packaging and all that stuff. Those are legitimate concerns that I believe can be addressed. To simply pull the plug and make it completely unregulated, untaxed, make it a complete free-for-all. Although intellectually that's appealing, I don't see that as being a practical solution, which is why I do think the Prop 2 is the way to go. But I appreciate your thoughts on it.
So do I get an opportunity to respond? Let me give you an opportunity a little bit later on. Eric, did you have anything else to say?
To the young lady that just spoke, I'm sorry about your loss. I think that all of us can agree that our medical marijuana laws could be fixed if our legislature would fix it. The concern that the group that I work for, and it's not 500 supporters, thousands of us, I'm concerned about it, that this was mixed with other issues that are just beyond the medical. And so I think if this measure was exclusively on fixing medical marijuana concerns, I think the conversation would be a very different one. And so, but like I said, I appreciate your concerns. And I think most people in Alaska agree that someone is paying with something. Our legislature should fix those issues.
Actually, you know that there are thousands and thousands of Alaskans that are terrified to get their medical marijuana card, including myself. I've had my doctor offer it to me and I refused to get it simply because the DEA doesn't care. They're using these lists that you get on as a bus list. They just go through it and come to people's house.
No. Go ahead.
I know people who have been busted by the DEA for having medical marijuana being completely in order, being completely legal by Alaska state laws, and still having the DEA come to their house because they were on a list somewhere that says this is a medical marijuana for patient and their marijuana plant care.
If we have time, let's talk to Trooper Casanova about that and the folks at DHSS, because I don't know the state policy to share that with. Okay. Let's go on and ask Laura Clark McKevin.
My name is Laura Tarmakita. I'm a single mom here in the Valley. I just have a few points to make. One is I do very much appreciate all the sides coming out here. I mean, we're all so passionate about this subject, and we all love our families. We all love Alaska. And so that is not in question. First, as an RN and a mother, I've looked at the evidence-based research that discusses the various adverse effects on the developing brain. And there's a lot of information about that on the internet. I'm not going to go into it, but, you know, we can all look that up. But a good resource is the Vote No on Two website to start with. So I do oppose the effects on our families, on our kids. The second issue is, after talking with law enforcement in Colorado and discussing not only the issues that they've personally seen, as well as the proven study from the Rocky Mountain study that you have quoted, there is an immense and adverse increase in youth, underage youth, or being involved in marijuana and smoking it. One of the issues that law enforcement is finding in Colorado is that the parents don't have to hide it anymore. So essentially, with or without their parents' permission, kids are getting it, bringing it to school, or bringing it and selling it to their friends. And also, they've noticed an increase in armed robbery and theft at the dispensary. They're also finding that they can't get the taxes that were promised because the FDIC cannot loan or take drug money. Therefore, it's really the honor system on reporting. And the federal government is hands-off in Colorado. They're not touching it. They're watching it, just like I think we should do. But as you mentioned, Eric, before you mentioned the Petri dish, Colorado and Washington, we have two very new and interesting movements, and we can watch those and see what happens. Now, the third issue I have is the tax burden. Since it is on the honor system, we are not going to be able to reap the benefits of the taxation. And then you have, and I've seen it on the website, the various increase in public, in essentially the public tax burden. The taxpayer will pay an immense amount regarding setting up this organizationally. I don't think that we'll reap back the tax benefits. The last I want to appeal to my libertarian friends, I have a quote, and may I suggest to you that I just want you to pause and think about where this actually does come from. I'm not against marijuana, medical marijuana. I'm not saying I'm against decriminalizing this in very specific and debated ways. But what I am against is who is behind this movement. It is big, and it is bigger than you and I or our state. Now, the MPP project is also in alliance with the OP. I'm almost at 3 minutes.
Right.
Okay. Well, I guess I can't. I'll write an article.
And
you can submit that on it. Thanks. And it is funded by OSI. They make the Koch brothers look like Oliver Twist.
Carl Siebert. probably don't need as much using time. Loud enough to be protected from shut up. I ain't got much to say, and it won't take long. I want to see two things happen here. It's going to be more expensive for everybody all the way around. There ain't going to be no cheap marijuana for nobody. And the part that scares me is it's going to be too excessive. The kids are going to get this stuff like you wouldn't believe. There's no way you're going to stop kids from getting it anyway. But it's going to cost them a hell of a lot more. Safety. Ron Hart.
Well, I guess one of the things I want to say was I think that a fellow up here mentioned that maybe the laws could be fixed. And I agree with that. The legislature could do that, but they try to do that. They can fix laws, they can change things. It's not really a real problem doing that. Whenever we determined we had a right to privacy, the Supreme Court did, we had it part of our constitutional right here. And 1975 decided that right after that, Raven just said that everybody should try for best use at all. A small quantity of marijuana inside their home. The legislature asked and said, how much we should we allow each person to have? But they said up to 4 ounces per adult person. Now, since that time, the law enforcement agencies have circumvented the constitutional rights of targets by saying that smell marijuana, even though the Supreme Court said lawful to have up to 4 ounces per adult person. But as a result of that, they've used this smell of marijuana to circumvent the constitutional rights of crime. If you pass the law on a vote for two, if you vote yes, it restores that right, constitutional right to privacy. It can no longer enter your home merely to smell home. They would have to say that their smell that they determine is an unlawful amount. And that's one of the reasons that we need to look at what's going on. The legislature's not going to do that, but if they do that themselves, it would violate and take away from the law enforcement officer their chief tool to serve the prosecution privacy. So as a result of that, everybody should consider a vote for yes on two restores your constitutional right to privacy. Thank you.
Thank you. Nola Marcy. Properly pronounce it.
Rhonda Marcy, but I go by the nickname Marcy, but that was from my Navy days. I actually have a question. I'll do one for three. I noticed your statistics on the amount of money that would be saved or would cost. I wasn't sure if you were still using the marijuana registry, if that would still be active after it's legalized, and if we would save some revenue not having to fund the registry course and any longer.
Let's just take that question. Is someone on from the Department of Health, is that where the marijuana registry is housed?
Lieutenant Governor Treadwell, this is Dr. Ward Hurlburt. I don't think I can answer that. I don't, from reading through the initiative, I don't see anything that would cancel out the registry that is maintained in the Bureau of Vital Statistics. Diane Castro may have a different take on that.
No, Dr. Hurlburt, I would agree with you at this point. There has been discussion early on in the process about what would this look like for the medical marijuana. Would it change it? Would it, you know, how would we work that? And I do know in talking with both Colorado and Washington that there has been discussions about how to kind of pull them together but still have some separation of the medical marijuana versus the recreational marijuana. So unless there's a decision made regulation-wise, I believe it would stay the same.
Let me just ask the sponsors, producer, Mr. Emperor, do you see this as canceling could the marijuana registry that's now on the books be canceled by regulation in the intent of this, or you would still have medical marijuana cards if this passes?
You still have marijuana.
The answer is probably not. It would probably take separate legislation, at least from three different sources. Go ahead with your next question.
Okay, my other question would be to the yes on two campaigns. Your definition of marijuana, is that including the flowering tops and leaves of the cannabis plant is it the same definition that's currently in state and federal law for marijuana? Would it impact the growing of industrial hemp in the state of Alaska?
No, I'm not sure how to understand the overlap with hemp laws specifically, but I do know that Fountain Institute does address specifically mature versus flowering plants with regard to personal use.
Currently, stocks and stems are often obtained and possessed, but it's the growing of the leaves and flowers that tops, which of course you can't grow a plant without letting it have its leaves. So that's what has hindered the industrial hemp movement or growing in Alaska, because it would be contrary to state law. And Mr. Cordero, I heard you spout the same rhetoric that I've heard in the legislature in 2006 when law enforcement went to pass their marijuana bill, recriminalizing small amounts of marijuana and contravention of our Raven right to privacy in the state. And you cited that marijuana is more potent in THC levels now. After I'm done with my presentation, I'd like you to provide me with the site or study that you're using, because as I did for the legislature in 2006, I provided a transcript from a criminal case here in Palmer where Jane Booth, who worked for the state of Alaska for 18 years in the crime lab, said the state of Alaska does not test for a percentage of THC-only presence or absence, and the state of Alaska has no studies that show that in Alaska, THC is any more potent than it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or now.
Thank you. That's a very good question. I want more information because this is happening in Colorado. We have a place to observe. The information.
There's no studies on percentage of THC from Colorado.
Journal of Medicine and some of the sources from law enforcement and emergency services actually cite and have the information.
Okay, I'm going to go back to my presentation, but please provide me with those citations at the end of this thing. I want to present for the record a study from the National Transportation Safety Board. This was done in 1993, but again, driving and marijuana use is still something that we're considering in this day and age. And spoiler alert, I'm going to give you from the summary what the summary of the study says. Drivers under the influence of marijuana retain insight in their performance and will compensate where they can, for example, by slowing down or increasing effort. As a consequence, THC's adverse effects on driving performance appear relatively small. You have a study. And I believe that marijuana use could be good for your health if you need it and use it as your doctor's orders, or if you're using it properly, like eating the meat of the seed of the plant. There's books that are out there, Marijuana Gateway to Health. I think that people saying they use it in 22 states for medical purposes kind of counteracts the government saying we don't know if it works. And as far as those ads or edibles, as far as edibles and children using it, I have seen, and you can find this on the internet over and over again, children who have inoperable brain cancer and epileptic seizures where they're having 2,500 a day, is giving them a gummy bear that has some THC, alleviates their pain and suffering and helps with their condition. By all means, we should be doing it. There are studies now that are showing people that are saving themselves from cancers and other diseases. And Lieutenant Governor, I know that's something personal to you, and I would just ask you to consider, as these people in the audience would, if it would save your family member and it was illegal, would you do it anyway? I can answer that. If it was my family member or even your family member and it would save their life, I would recommend you do it anyway. Thank you very much.
And Rhonda, thank you. And I guess I have a question. Do you see the intent of the bill as somehow authorizing the use of marijuana while driving?
No, I do not. I just believe that that's been a concern that's been raised. I think that there should be standards set for operating under the influence that actually reflect on influence and not a police officer being able to pull you over the side of the road and test you and find out that 20 days ago you smoked some cannabis and your cutoff level is still over what Washington is using, I believe, is 0.05 nanograms per milliliter, which is basically smaller than two BBs in a boxcar. So at a cutoff level, there needs to be some reasonableness in the bureaucracy. And I understand that's a hard thing to get sometimes, but it really is time you can see from these meetings. Sure.
And just to ask the sponsors, is there anything in the bill that authorizes the government to set an acceptable threshold for marijuana use and driving?
I believe they're leaving that to the legislature. My concern there is in 1974 we passed our right to privacy in the state, and we were waiting for the legislature to put in the law in effect to tell us what that means exactly. And we would still be waiting today because the only guidance we got was in the Supreme Court case under Raven, and that right to privacy never followed through in other legislation from our legislature. And my concern is that we'll follow that same bureaucratic roadblock in this instance.
Thank you.
I think that is still going to be an issue. I mean, you can't be impaired and be driving. I think we saw that race car or horrific race car crash. That's a really awful idea. And I do want to say, with regard to drug testing, as a commercial pilot, I don't care what the level is. I don't ever want to show up in my test so I don't consume because I've got way too much money invested in flight training. I appreciate your comments. I agree with you on almost everything, although I do have to say, anything that looks like a gummy bear with THC, I'm going to be opposed to. I mean, that's just not reasonable people. I get what you're saying. I don't think you meant that specifically, but I don't want to talk about gummy bears with THC. However, I do want to hit on three other points. You talked about THC content versus CBD. I actually didn't realize this myself until I started researching it. There are specific strains of cannabis that are very, very low in the psychoactive THC and very high in CBD that do have medicinal properties. In fact, there's one strain called Charlotte's Web that was developed specifically and named for a little girl for whom her seizures were controlled by ingesting these high CBD products. So there's a huge medical application for this that we haven't really been talking about, but it's very real. And with regard to medical, you know, we have sort of a legal catch-22 here where you can have a medical marijuana card, but you can't buy it anywhere. That's just, you know, and I'm not faulting anybody for it, but it is a situation that exists in our current law that ballot measure 2 would ultimately address, if not directly, certainly indirectly. The other thing I want to mention has to do with the potency of marijuana today versus, you know, 30 years ago. You know, the assertion is that the strains that we're getting today are higher in THC. They are. That's a fact. They are. But I would offer this for consideration. If somebody is accustomed to drinking two 16-ounce beers at 5% alcohol volume after work, if you give them two 16-ounce glasses of Crown Royal, they're not going to drink those. They're going to fall over. Okay, so I guess my point there is that, you know, you're not going to simply consume the same amount of a much more potent product without knowing what you're getting into. So it's a valid argument, but I think it sort of answers itself. And again, you know, ballot measure 2 does offer provisions for the legislature through a marijuana control board to require testing and labeling of concentrations of different products. So I think that there's a way to address that.
In other words, you know if you're buying 3.2 beer or 1.21 rum.
Right.
Eric?
Just a quick comment. And one of the concerns that people have throughout Alaska and that we've heard from law enforcement is that there's no standard to measure marijuana levels from someone who might be driving under the influence right after use. And I think that even Bruce and I agree on that. Fortunately, people should not be driving while impaired. I mean, that's just not acceptable. The same report that I keep mentioning, the Rocky Mountain report, said that while in Colorado for the last several years, traffic fatalities have decreased overall, and this includes alcohol and other drugs,
the THC toxicology report, marijuana report, has said that those fatalities have increased since medical marijuana became legalized. And so, is it because they were impaired at the time? We don't know that, and that's one of the concerns, is that we don't know. There are still a lot of unknowns. And I believe that the Association of Chiefs of Police have been saying that for the last few months. There are too many unknowns. It's going to require money to train just $6 million for the first years to train Alaska police officers and our peace officers. And one last thing that I wanted to mention is even if this measure passes, that doesn't address the concern that the young lady talked about the DEA. That's a federal government. So whether measure two passes or not, and if it passes, that could still be an issue.
Yeah, I'm trying to hold off the debate. I'm really looking at a rebuttal where if you got a question, but let's feel free to get that, and you can submit comments for the record. Let's get through the list of folks who'd like to talk. Thank you very much, Bruce and Eric and Rhonda. Lynn Baker.
Mr.
Spanos with the tax division of Department of Revenue, could you answer that question?
You know, I'm just looking at the initiative now. I don't remember reading anything in there about a special fund, but I do believe there was something about some of the funds being allocated to specific use, and I haven't highlighted that, so it may take me a minute to find.
I'm going to help you. Had there been an allocation to a fund like Colorado, I would have had to rule it unconstitutional to start.
There you go.
Because we have a constitutional requirement that, number one, that an initiative did not appropriate or dedicate funds, and two, we have a general constitutional prohibition on that as well. So that's why we had to amend the Constitution for the permanent fund or something like that.
Thank you for answering the question. And I just want to understand two different parts to this. I am decided to come out and speak because of what I've been reading in the paper, and it's kind of turning into like a Reaper map of Detroit Rock City, and we're forgetting what this is all about originally. And I am in favor of this passing, first of all, for the medicinal purposes. The state absolutely didn't go far enough when they passed the medical marijuana law. I've had MS for 20 years. The last 8 years, I've been in pain, staying right. And I don't know if you know what that feels like. I've had to quit work. I owned a successful business. I owned a team of title, 30 employees. That's my job. I quit my work. During the day, I control my pain with yoga, massage, meditation. I'm not interested in being sound. I'm not interested in being high. But what happens at nighttime, and my husband can tell you, is I cry, I moan, I yell out all night long. And I'm afraid to get my medical marijuana card. I am not going to grow it. I have 6 grandchildren. I was a business owner. I don't want to be arrested. I've been in the community a long time. I'm not going to grow it. And who am I going to ask to grow it? My circle of friends? And ask the president of the bank or my friend on the assembly, yeah, they're going to grow it for me. I can, you know, get it by proxy. I can't buy it. I can't buy a little bit and hide it from my grandkids. I'm not going to have them come to my home while I'm growing. So that's what I've done. I didn't even want to try it until this year when the pain got so bad. Somebody told me, convinced me finally to try it. And for the first time in years, I actually was able to sleep without having muscle spasms. I've been prescribed Vicodin, Percocet. I don't want to be stoned. I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night and run into the walls of the bathroom, which is what I was doing. I like to be in control. And I don't drink. So that's just nothing that helps. But the second part is about
and not the medical part of it. Good Lord, we're adults here. I owned a business, and as far as people coming to work stoned, I had employees come to work drunk. I had employees come to work high on pills. I had someone that went into rehab with pill addiction. I have, as far as children getting a hold of it, my son was in high school. Him and his friends got into our liquor cabinet. I had to put it away somewhere else. That's just part of being a responsible parent. It's going to happen. And then the hypocrisy. Okay, I've been a member of this community and business owner. I've been with the legislators. I've been with people in the community that are, you know, some of the people that are speaking out against it. Tell me it's any better that I watch them drink. I mean, this is hypocritical. I've partied with some of them. They party hard. It's just something different. So I would like, especially if we can't get this passed, I've got to find a way for our law to be changed to help people with medical needs, because I don't have any other choice, and I'm tired of hurting.
Thank you. Can I take your statement in the form of a fast question just to help answer what has, and Diane Casto, you're online with the Department of Health and Social Services. Is the pharmacy board under your department, or is it under Commerce?
No, it is not under our department.
Okay. And Michaela, is pharmacy under your board, your agency or administration? I should know that.
It is under the Department of Commerce, CBPL.
Okay, and is it legal now, if the pharmacy board were to so decide, could they authorize the sale of medical marijuana?
I do not believe so, but I would need to check to give a solid answer on that. I would really have to check with our pharmacy
administrator. Could you check on that? I've had a few conversations where constituents have asked me that question, and. You know,
I believe my understanding is that it would not be, that it's not legal because it's not a legal substance, but I can certainly confirm that.
Okay. If you could get us that for the record, that would be helpful. We've had two comments today about people who have medical marijuana cards. And then a quick question for Mr. Casanovas, Major Casanovas. Are you aware of any law enforcement arm in Alaska or whoever has the medical registry, if that's in the Department of Health? Do we share that information with the Drug Enforcement Administration, or is that private medical information covered under HIPAA?
Lieutenant Governor, I believe that question is best focused to the Department of Health and Social Services, who has the registry. As to what rules they give, as to whether it's a federal law enforcement agency, a state law enforcement agency, or a municipal law enforcement agency who makes an inquiry of that register as to what information they will provide.
Lieutenant Governor Treadwell, this is Dr. Ward Hurlburt. That information is not shared with the Drug Enforcement Agency. If they were to seek a court order to do it, then the state would have to decide whether they would defend against that or not, and the judge would have to decide whether it was legal. But to my knowledge, they have not ever requested that information from the Bureau of Vital Statistics.
Thank you. One of your answers to our question the other day, we're getting ready to put on the web, I haven't forwarded it yet, but if you have information about the policy of sharing that information. I just want to bust whatever myths are out there, if there are myths. There have been several statements made today, and I just don't know whether they're factual, so
we'll go from there. I've done a lot of research about procuring marijuana under the current law, and my two choices are to grow it or to cross-see someone else to grow it. And I'm 53 years old. I'm a smart woman, and I'm a grown-ass. I think I can decide for myself.
I'm not arguing how you should vote on this measure. I'm just want to make sure that we understand what the law is. Thank you.
I choose not to do a lot of other things, but I think I can decide for myself.
Yeah.
And, thank you.
And Lynn, thank you very much. I know many people who are fighting MS.
Thank you.
I think our
I did.
I'm a disabled veteran. The Veterans Administration prescribes medication for me that makes you get dizzy and fall down and has other bad side effects. Marijuana takes care of the chronic pain much better than the medication the VA prescribes for me. None of my VA doctors have a problem with me taking it, but they can't advocate it. If you're worried about your children getting access to marijuana under this regulation, they're already accessing unregulated marijuana. If you're worried about people driving or flying under this, they're already driving or flying if they're going to be doing it under unregulated black market marijuana. Any of your fears about what regulated marijuana can do to the state, deregulated black market marijuana that's not being tested is already doing it to the state. We're adults. We've tried it here for going on 80 years now. Prohibition does not work. Let us be adults. Thank you.
Mike, is it Coor or Coover? I can't read your handwriting very well. Palmer?
Mike.
Mike! All right, that's an N. I'm sorry.
Okay, I got a question. First of all, I got a question to Dr. Filbert before I go into my statement. Has there been any study relative to FAS compared to that of marijuana use during pregnancy?
Dr. Herbert, did you hear the question?
Yes, sir. No, to my knowledge, I have not seen such a study. Because the marijuana has been classified as a Category 1 drug, there has been, as you all know, very little testing. And so the medical use is based on heartfelt but anecdotal kinds of stories. And I think that the federal government now is starting to support some research that will lead to some good sound evidence-based studies that will expand the knowledge, but I am not aware of any studies that have shown impairment due to marijuana use during pregnancy.
Yeah. Do we have individual cases that you've dealt with in this area?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Coons, go ahead with your testimony or if you have other questions.
Okay. I'm voting no on Proposition 2 for many reasons, as I stated here prior to me and after me. So I'd like to show my opposition with the following. When the previous people talked about driving and how that people traffic study showed that people that use marijuana and driving are driving slower with increased caution. If you had to talk to any police officer going down the road and you see somebody driving really slow or doing, you know, things that are kind of above and beyond, that's usually kind of a flag for pulling over for DUI. I'm a retired paramedic. In that 22 years, I've seen far too much trauma, way more than just about anybody here unless you're a combat vet. I've been told by those who are legalizing pot that it doesn't affect your driving ability. I've even had some say they drive better stoned. When asked about sentencing for driving under the influence or impaired, I've been told that supporters would be in opposition and 1 month in jail for the first offense of driving while impaired with loss of driving privileges for 1 year. Opposed to 1 year in jail and loss of privileges of 5 years for a minor injury accident while DUI. Opposed to 5 years in jail and revoking driving privileges for life if multiple people are injured or serious injuries such as intensive care. Then, of course, they would be opposed to the above. They really oppose life in prison for a death caused by DUI. Why is this? Simple. The person who smokes dope and then drives is just as selfish and uncaring for others as those who drive after drinking or using drugs that they know impair their judgment. If you take that personally, fine. Then you are part of the problem and I have zero sympathy for you as you sit in jail for injuring or killing others on the road. I don't care if those drivers are stoned, drunk, impaired by prescription drugs, the driver is impaired and putting people in dire jeopardy, period. And I call on our justice system to toss you all in jail for far more than we do today. We know that people cause vehicle crashes for using a cell phone, not to mention texting. We know that people cause vehicle crashes for many reasons, mostly because they're not paying attention. So smoking dope isn't going to cause an impairment? Really? I'm not some old man that doesn't have some history of making mistakes. Made my share. And yes, I've gotten stoned on pot, but that was back in the 70s, way less THF, DHC than today. Could I have functioned normally then? Absolutely not. In the last few years, I was a security officer at Jayfair. I've stopped drivers coming on base stoned. Why? Because they're driving and their actions, not to mention the smell. In closing, the excuse that dope isn't harmful as much as the light of day as it was in the 60s. When you have scraped families out of cars because of a fair driver, then we can talk.
Mike, thank you for your testimony. Mark Fox, or did you have a question? If you'd like to provide the memo, we'll put that up on the website, include it in the record.
Okay, well, they're saying that they're taking a stand back approach for anybody that's legalized. However, the legal medical marijuana in our state, LS the statute 1730020, a peace officer may enter a registrant's premises at reasonable times and in a reasonable manner to inspect the premises. So an officer can come into the home for having medical marijuana. Whenever that should be between him and your doctor.
Let me just ask the question. That we determined that law would still stay on the books in our previous conversation. Is that correct, Mr. Rampert?
Yes.
Okay, so that law would stay on the books there, and the question of how the medical registry would interface with this law is one of those what I'll call many technical questions that would have to be dealt with one way or the other. And there's conflicts. There's, we've brought many of them out in the record, and I would encourage people to look at the hearing record of others. And if you have questions about that, please raise them. Mark Fox, it's your turn. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mark Fox. I just wanted to reach out, and I heard the concerns about law enforcement. And, Mike, I know that you have very passionate ideas about this. Certainly nobody's trying to say marijuana is entirely safe, and anyone involved in the movement of the industry that tries to convince you that immediately dosing with large quantities of concentrates is a safe activity and then knowing driving is just not being genuine. I do agree with that, absolutely. Informally, not policy, in Seattle they had a policy of officers asking people, have you smoked in the last 6 hours? It wasn't a bona fide test, but anyone who's involved in using cannabis can probably tell you 6 hours after you complete dosing, you're probably fairly safe to drive. That's an opinion, not a medical science fact. So, with that being said, I'd just like to read a short statement for the record. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Fox. I'm the COO of Clinical Cannabis based in Houston. I appreciate being part of this conversation, and I'm grateful that I live in a state that allows generous access to legislators and agencies who ultimately become stakeholders in the subject of marijuana. We're a startup, and our primary ownership is Alaskan-only investors. I've been involved in the cannabis industry for many years, including founding and operating the first medical marijuana dispensary in the city of Seattle. I am an Alaskan. I was raised here, left and worked in other places in television, and I'm back now because I believe this is the right time for Alaska to embrace what is already here. The question is, all that being said, are we doing it the right way? Well, first of all, I want to speak to about the 800 gorilla, pound gorilla that's in the room, and that is basically polarization. Everybody here is on one side or the other, and I see nobody actually working to resolve and kind of connect on solutions for the state of Alaska. It is a $60 million industry. It's not going anywhere. The real stakeholders are growers, processors, retailers, governments at every level, law enforcement, and legislators. So until all of those people join the conversation, I think it's sort of limited. It's more of an opinion. Okay. It's important to acknowledge, I feel, that no on big marijuana, big mistake side did get one thing absolutely right. In my experience, concentrates refined with butane are very dangerous in my opinion. I, even though I'm going to vote yes on this initiative, I really encourage everybody in this room to think twice about butane. Butane is carcinogenic, and butane is explosive. So when we begin to talk about what products we're going to allow in Alaska, I want everybody to think about that carefully. Dabbing, as they call it, has started years ago in Seattle, and I watched a number of problems develop in and around it. So I'll be honest with folks, the high level of impairment from dabbing and concentrates is something we address. Thanks for your time, guys. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Cordero?
I appreciate your testimony. And again, the folks that are concerned about this issue, a lot of the supporters of the jet side are trying to portray Alaskans that don't support Measure 2 as heartless or inhumane. We don't care about people with disabilities or people with a medical condition. Let me tell you, that is not the case. If this measure was entirely on medical marijuana, the conversation would be very, very different. I might not even be here today representing this group. And in regards to the traffic fatalities, I believe that the police chiefs association, in one of their letters that they sent out to the press and to the public, they said that they have seen an increase in crash fatalities here in our state. So I wanted to ask Lieutenant Governor if your chief medical officer had any statistics on traffic fatalities involving marijuana.
Dr. Herbert or Major Casanovas, do you have any statistics on traffic fatalities and marijuana in Alaska?
This is Major Casanovas, and no, sir, I do not.
I do not have any specific to Alaska. I have information nationally, but not in Alaska.
Could you provide that national information to us for the record?
Yes. These are not numbers of accidents. This is from the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime Report, one sentence, quote, in a study of seriously injured drivers admitted to a level one trauma center, more than a quarter of all drivers tested positive for cannabis. This is a quote from New England Journal of Medicine article published on June 5th this year, page 2221, states, both immediate and long-term exposure to marijuana impaired driving ability. Marijuana is the illicit drug most commonly reported in connection with impaired driving and accidents, including fatal accidents. That's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, go ahead, Bruce.
This is Bruce Schulte, representative. Yes, I'm too. Just a quick question for the commissioner online. In those studies of the 20-odd percent of accident participants, victims, whatever, that had marijuana in their system, is there any further information as to how many of them had other compounds in their system that would actually, you know, potentially have contributed to the accident? The statistic sort of it might be misleading in that respect.
I do not have a quote on that right in front of me, but from my reading on that, it is very clear there's a consensus when there are multiple compounds, for example, alcohol and marijuana in the blood, that it's worse than with this just one or the other. But there is really a plethora of comments that the marijuana itself alone does impair driving ability and reaction time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
To the question that was raised by Mr. Fox, I'm going to ask the proponents and the opponents, can you show me where in the law the state could outlaw under this without waiting 2 years the use of butane in home concentration facilities, if that's what the public wanted to do, say, in a comment period?
Section 17.38.090, open space regulations and standards.
Could you identify yourself for the record, Dana, just because the question's been raised in this comment here?
Yeah,
My name is Chris Herbert. I'm the political director for the campaign, the Yes on Tuesday campaign. So in section 17.38.090 rulemaking, it specifically says that the regulatory board shall enact regulations regarding health and safety for the manufacture of marijuana products and cultivation of marijuana. So that could go as far as to ban the use of containing marijuana products.
Could you ban that in homes as well as in certified manufacturing facilities?
Not sure about that one.
I think you probably couldn't, actually.
If I may weigh in on that. By comparison, consider during alcohol prohibition how many homemade stills exploded on people because they were brewing alcohol out of necessity. I mean, the process, I've never done it, but from what I've read, the process of extracting compounds using butane or CO2 or others, it's expensive and messy and really kind of involved. I would propose that if you could simply go down to a legitimate licensed store and purchase some sort of concentrate that has already been processed and tested using equipment that's way more expensive than any home user would ever invest in, why would you need to do it at home? I mean, I suspect that problem is going to go away just as a natural course of events.
But it is legal under this to do that activity at home.
To my knowledge, it's not illegal currently.
Okay, so you believe today it's illegal if you have the
best of my knowledge,
the Raven sanctioned amount of marijuana, it's legal to make butane hash oil at
home. The Raven, but to the best of my knowledge, there's nothing in that.
Okay.
I would prefer a clarification.
Yeah, if you'd like to take time to clarify that for the record, that's there. Okay, thank you. Our next person who wants to testify signed in, I believe, is Bass. Mr. Bass. Bass. Thank you very much.
My name is Jan Bass. I'm a medical marijuana card holder. Very expensive, that card, $300. Plus the medical examination with the doctor, that was another $125. Yeah, it was incredibly expensive to get marijuana.
Could you speak closer to the mic?
To get marijuana, I have to ask somebody to sell it to me. In order to do that, they're breaking the law. If I buy it from them, I'm breaking the law. It's wrong. I can grow it. I'm a master gardener, but I choose not to do that because my home in jeopardy, my family in jeopardy, or my assets in jeopardy. I really want people to look at it and say yes on this, just to keep me out of trouble, only me out of trouble, and everybody else is here. I think it's wrong.
Thank you for your testimony. Do you have any questions? Christina Wilson.
Good afternoon. Thanks for hosting today. For the record, I am the volunteer spokesperson for the Big Marijuana, Big Birthday, Vote No on 2 campaign. I became involved when I saw some of the products, particularly edibles, and when I had a conversation with my son, who at the time was 8, about it. The thing that really compelled me is Lewis, and he said, I can't tell if it's a drug or a treat. And for me, that was a tipping point in terms of being involved as a parent and a member of the community, and I have lots of very difficult and involved conversations about all kinds of situations to keep my kids safe and to make good choices. But the choice is being taken away from me when advertising and marketing and retailing comes in to promote these types of products, and that's what would happen in Alaska if this ballot measure were to pass. It promotes a commercial and retail industry like we see in Colorado. There are no advertising restrictions. There are no edible. There are no packaging restrictions in Colorado, and the ballot measure that's written in Alaska actually protects the industry more than it does in Colorado. I have a couple of questions. for the folks on the phone, some of the safe folks, as well as the folks here in the room. Can I just read them to you, and then maybe they can...
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. Is there any science or data to show that people stop using alcohol if marijuana is legalized?
Dr. Hurlburt, would you like to take a stab at that question, looking for data that shows less alcohol use if marijuana use grows or is stabilized?
No, I can't read a quote right in front of me, but from the articles that I have read, it does not have that effect to reduce alcohol use. There have also been the contention that it reduces the use of other narcotics, and I was in a national meeting of my counterparts from the other states and territories just a couple of weeks ago, and the federal officials from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration said that it also did not reduce the use of other opioids.
Okay, thank you. That's one of the major claims by the
Yes,
I wanted to clarify that, but I didn't have that data. I also would like to ask, we've talked about revenue and what it would bring to our state. What have we learned from Colorado in terms of what they were told they would receive and the tax revenue that they've actually seen?
Yeah, Brandon, at the Department of Revenue, I know that we have not asked you to estimate revenue, but have you been watching the Colorado situation in terms of estimates versus real collections and how they've dealt with collections?
I have read some and heard some about it in these hearings. I don't remember the numbers, but they did estimate much higher than they're currently collecting. I think they also had some data available to them because they did have medical marijuana selling happening prior to legalizing for recreational use. And therefore, they had some data to use, and they analyzed it, and their projections did come in much higher than actual collections to date.
Okay.
I guess a couple of comments. The way that ballot measure is written and based upon our Constitution, you can't change a ballot measure, any substantive change, including the definition of marijuana or what is protected in our ballot measure as it's written, would not be allowed. It would be considered a repeal, and we would be subject to legal action, particularly by outside organizations looking to bring the production to Alaska. A couple of other, so the butane hash oil, we would not be able to prohibit that as a product sold in Alaska as it is in Colorado. Another thing is I'd like to ask Dr. Hurlburt specifically, I've heard the data that for every tax dollar you bring in traditional substances, they cause and cost the most harm to society. It costs us $10 in lost productivity, healthcare costs, harm to youth and families. I guess I'd like to ask, why is it that there is, the cost to our society is so much more for tobacco and alcohol? Thank you.
Yes, Lieutenant. Well, and Christina, on I didn't. It wasn't totally clear. But I think I heard your question on we impose sin taxes, and again, and we would include alcohol and tobacco on that. On both of those substances, it's very clear that although taxes are very high, and very high taxes on tobacco in Alaska have served us very well, it's been a major factor in our big improvement in the number of adolescents who smoke tobacco. Because kids are more price sensitive, but even those taxes are very, very high, and our cigarette prices are very, very high, the cost to society for the medical complications of the use of tobacco, such as lung cancer, such as heart attacks, such as chronic lung disease, are several times the dollar amount when we spend the money on Medicare, on Medicaid, and so on to do that. And the same is true for alcohol. So although we impose taxes, and even though a relatively small portion of those taxes go directly to health care, the societal public taxpayer costs are several times the amount of the total collections on that, on those two substances. With marijuana, with smoking marijuana, the same kinds of toxins and other the tobacco smoke are there, so that totally are related from the cannabis in there, that it's reasonable to believe that they will cause comparable kinds of lung problems.
Thank you, Dr. Hurlburt. We have 10 more people who signed up to testify, and if we hold our three-minute limit, we'll be able to get through about half an hour, 40 minutes after. And I appreciate the time and the questions. You are allowed to ask questions, and we're here to serve you, so we'll go forward with the hearing. Next person who signed up is Chris Nikolaski, and I mangled your name last time, Chris, and I apologize. I think I'm mangling again. Go ahead, Bruce.
I just want to address something Ms. Wilson had said. There's a lot of material there, but I just want to address two things. The processing sale of butane hatch oil, I think to have an honest discussion like that about that, you can find that to hatch oil, regardless of how it's actually derived. So hatch oil produced in a industrial facility with applicable fire codes and so forth does not necessarily pose any greater risk than producing other volatile compounds like, you know, alcohol and, on. When it comes to cost, though, I wanted to address that, because if we're going to talk about the cost impact of Valvetta 2, we really have to look at the total cost, not just of regulation, but also prohibition. On the prohibition side, you've got the cost of law enforcement of arresting, arraigning, trying, and incarcerating people to whatever extent that is. On the revenue side, if you assume conservatively 200 ounces per year being sold, that's $10 million of revenue to the state, so straight excise tax, plus permitting fees at the state and local level.
All right, 200 times 50 is a million, not 10 million.
I'm sorry, 200,000.
Okay.
Times 50 is 10 million. I hope, because I did it twice in my calculator.
Go ahead.
So we've got 115,000 folks that are consuming it. Some people tell me that my number is way too low. I don't know, as I said, I don't consider myself. But
it's all speculation.
It is largely speculation. You could argue if the $60 million industry or $100 million, I can't say. But if we assume conservatively that there are 200,000 ounces to be sold and taxed, that's a $10 million revenue, plus additional permitting fees and so forth. But again, my point is, if you're going to talk about the economics, you can't just look at how much taxes you're going to collect or not. You also have to look at how much money you're going to save. So the Senate Governor pointed out that establishing a control board, I believe the number was somewhere in the range of up to $800,000. That's a real number. You have to.
Hello? Did we get dropped?
I think we did.
We did.
Yeah. I think
I'm trying to call him right now. The same thing happened to me.
And me too.
Yeah, me too.
I'm so glad you guys said something.
Okay.
So is it just all the state employees who got the pop, or are there more people online to testify?
I was just calling in to testify. So.
Okay. So is
yeah, same talking? Here.
Yeah, this is Ward Hilbert. I was dropped. I'm going to dial back in.
Okay. Yeah.
Do we all need to do so?
I think we should probably all back in, yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I'll do it at once, and then they won't be able to get us through. But
okay.
Thanks.
Cool. Hello?
Hello?
It's not on AKL TV either on my computer. It's, they've dropped it as well.
So everything just dropped.
Not on AKL TV.
Hey, guys, you probably want to call back in.
It's not on the computer either. I mean, the feed's not coming through online either.
They said that the whole meeting got disconnected, so they're going to, but those of us online, I'm calling from my cell phone. So,
oh, okay.
We just line up, but you guys might want to call back in.
Okay, thank you.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I think we're just supposed to sit and wait here in silence. She said it was going to connect again.
I hope so.
I can do that.
Escalated quickly.
I believe the way that the last state constitution is written, the legislature cannot pass rules that would substantially undermine this ballot measure, but they could expand on it. So
where this parliamentary silence with regard to hemp, and I'm going to put this as a question to the Lieutenant Governor, would the legislature not have the opportunity to define that and say, okay, for commercial operators who are growing 2,000 to 4,000 plants, where they have a commercial quantity of byproduct available that they could process?
There's no byproduct in cannabis. Every part of the plant.
Well, I'm going to say the stock, well, if you part of the byproduct being what you're not selling for retail store for medicinal or recreational purposes, stocks and families, for example.
So the byproduct for medical marijuana.
Okay, if you want to divide it that way. If you can't sell it through other markets, you're talking about hemp products, fabrics, fuel. I'm
talking about all cannabis products.
Okay, so my question is, would the legislature have the opportunity to expand on that and say, okay, we're going to apply the following guidelines for these other products on which Title 2 is silent? That I think that they would have the option of doing that without undermining the core of Title 2. And they could do that within that two-year period. I think it's a reasonable thing. Otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of waste that goes to landfill somewhere. So if somebody, if some enterprising individual finds a positive use for it, why not? I mean, we've got a whole burgeoning industry in peonies. Why not cannabis stocks, right? It's a rhetorical question, I guess.
Well, okay, so here you've had a question answered with a question by the sponsors, and I guess I'll just say this. I've been through 5 hearings on this. I've asked the question several times. I believe there was an attempt in the definition to separate the recreational medicinal product of the stock from the others. I believe there was an... Well, that you're going to have to ask the sponsor, and I'm not sure...
It's the most productive plant in the world. I mean,
that's fine.
It has over a 10,000-year relationship with the most productive species in the world. Every strain is different and reacts differently to humans and society.
Thank you. So the question of how much you can possess, we've heard a couple of different, we've heard some intent from the sponsors, and we've heard some reading of the plain language that at least people have argued that intent may not be in the plain language. That, you know, I'm just going to report to you, that's what we've heard in 5 hearings. Okay, the question of whether or not this allows and whether, as Bruce said, it can be expanded upon by the legislature or vitiate the intent, you know, is one of those questions. So I can't answer the question for you today, but I actually appreciate the fact that you put the question on the record. And if the sponsors, one way or the other, would like to provide, you know, a legal analysis of why you wrote something in one particular way, that's a good thing to have on the record. Courts don't always listen to intent language or look at legislative history. When they look at something, they usually look at the plain language of the law. But at the same time, intent language is often referred to and sometimes helps clarify the plain language of the law. So with that, what you've done is you've raised one of the several what I'll call mechanical questions. I'm not arguing for or against the bill. You may be, that I can't tell you what the bill says simply. The bill is pretty simple about the $50 per ounce. Except that we don't know an ounce of what. Okay.
Thank you. In regards to OT, I mean, cannabis filters the air. So the more we pollute, the more we have the biggest harp facility spraying chemicals above us. And the more our air is polluted, the higher the THC content goes. Or could it be that, genetic modification of the plant? There are 4 different types of THC. There's delta-9 THC, a couple of them, delta-8 THC, and then there's regular THC.
Thank you.
Has the government ever genetically modified cannabis?
I'm not sure. I would ask the government representatives on this. Well, to any of the government representatives on this case, do you have information about the government genetically modifying cannabis? We're on a cell phone. MTA's service went down citywide, so we're not on the wire.
They're looking at getting an analog backup to the digital, so we'll probably switch over very soon. But for right now,
interestingly, we can hear you better on the cell phone than on the other line.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Kim Stryker with DEC. I am not aware of any of what the speaker asked about. However, there are some rules in statute regarding labeling.
What does that have to do with genetically modifying plants?
Well, the issue of GMOs and genetic modification of plants, what I believe the speaker was referring to is this, is that because the agencies have the capability to set regulations on labeling, it's entirely possible that someone like yourself could propose a labeling requirement that lets you know whether or not the marijuana you're buying is genetically modified or not. I believe that was your point. Was that not your point, Kristen? Or Kim, rather?
Just with regard to food, there are some labeling laws requiring folks to disclose certain ingredients.
Okay.
Okay. Which, I mean, it is good food.
Yeah. Sure. And I guess the point is we have allowed people to ask questions beyond the 3 minutes. I'm going to ask you to wind up your questions, though, so that others can speak. Okay. And if you've got questions, we'll have time afterwards. We'll try to get them addressed. Okay. Thank you.
I would like to propose a community-ran organization, whatever you'd like to call it, whatever title you'd like to give it, something run by an entity to oversee cannabis that's ran by the community, not by the government, because like alcohol is, I mean, and just about everything else is a failure. I don't want to see a failure of cannabis.
Thank you.
Would that be a
feasible
option?
You asked that at the Monday hearing. One of the questions that was put to the sponsors was, could a government, either the state government or local government, limit the number of people who could be in the business? I believe the answer is yes. The ABC board does that now with alcohol. Then the question is, could they limit it to themselves, to a nonprofit community organization, to a village store? And that question is a little bit indeterminate. There's an expectation, I believe, in reading the bill my reading the bill intimates that there would be commercial businesses. On the other hand, today's current law allows the state and communities to limit it to village-owned liquor stores and that sort of thing. So I don't know if Mr. Beasley wants to add anything to that, but your question of whether or not you could get a community-owned co-op or single franchisee for the state and keep it out of business is a question to ask for the sponsors. I think we could do that for liquor right now in the state, but I think it'd be very difficult given the fact that we've licensed so many bars.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor Bob Beasley with the ABC board here.
Yeah, Bob Beasley.
Yes, sir. They can limit it to community-owned and operated stores, but like right now under Title IV with alcohol laws, that's done through the local option process. So if that were written into law to do that, it would again be up to the voters of that community whether or not that's the avenue they wanted to take.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter LaMonaco with the Alaska Cannabis Club.
All right. So I am Peter LaMonaco, one of the co-founders of the Alaska Cannabis Club. Just wanted to give you a little background of who I am, where I come from. I'm 27 years old now, and graduated from West High School, Alaska resident. I'm actually part of the client, grandmother's from Aniac. And just wanted to give you my marijuana story. I am a four-time national karate champion. I have been to the Super Bowl for the Pop Warner Little Scholars football team, traveled all around the nation. There was teen marijuana use while I was growing up. It didn't affect me. I had responsible parents who raised me right, to raise me to know the difference between good and bad. So really, that part of that should be on the parent's shoulder. And yes, it may be more available, but at the same time, with this law passing, we can go after the people who are actually doing the underground sales, and not like the big companies, or we say it's going to be big companies, but we all know we're trying to keep this in Alaska, in poor Alaska. So that's the last thing we're trying to but I just want to make sure that you see, not just in a, an uproar, everyone throws off their hats and says, you know, well, I'm going to go smoke weed now. It's not going to be like that. Just want to touch on other things here. The benefits versus, you know, alcohol and tobacco. Alcohol and tobacco have no benefits whatsoever, but they are legal, and they are up to our discretion to how we use them. I am currently addicted to smoking cigarettes, nicotine, the most addictive substance on the earth, but I can still go to any gas station and purchase that. So why not go to a dispensary, purchase something else that at the end of my hard, will make me feel better and help me go to sleep and help me just help my soul. That's my marijuana story. And
this gives me the right to make my own choices in life, and that's all I want to say. Okay.
Charlene Eggby. Charlene, for the record, did you sign in under a different name at Monday?
Charlotte Green. Okay. That's what most people know me as. My legal name is Charlene Eggby. I'll be voting under Charlene Eggby.
No problem. I just wanted to clarify this for the record.
Yeah.
Welcome to the hearing.
So, have you ever smoked marijuana?
Yes. Actually, I did when I was very young in college, and it was the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life.
Can you tell us why?
Well, one, it was a terrifying experience. It caused pain in my chest, and I felt out of control.
Where did you get that marijuana from?
You know, back then in college, who knows? I lived in New Orleans.
Well, today it's kind of the same exact case. You think if you were to go to a dispensary and have someone well-educated about what exactly you were getting, you might have had a different experience?
Right. But you know what? The thing is, we're talking about a measure. We're not talking about me or my personal experience.
But we are, because you're here trying to take away our choice. You're here trying to sway us using fear-mongering and scare tactics and misinformation that you're cherry-picking from a study, not even a study, but a 66-page, I don't even know what to call Tom Gorman, who had, even after Coloradoans, which is where he is from, voted to legalize recreational marijuana, is still going after Coloradoans who are using recreational marijuana, calling everyone that uses it a criminal. Saying every business is a criminal enterprise in Colorado under this marijuana legalization initiative. I just don't understand why you're here doing this, fighting for your cause.
Well, first of all, I work for the campaign. I represent the
so it's your job.
Large. This is my job.
Okay,
and I represent the group of many Alaskans.
That's it then. No, this is your job. You answered it. And then one other question. are these people on the phone supposed to be unbiased, or are they supposed to be speaking on behalf of the big alcohol No On Two campaign?
The people in state government. I worked very hard in these hearings to give each side equal say. The others who work for state government are the people who, under the law that you espouse, would have to administer the law. So they're here to answer questions about that. In the case of our Department of Health, right now it's the state's current policy to try to reduce drug use, period.
So that's why the medical guy, what's his name?
Dr. Ward Herbert, who is the state's medical officer, whose job today is answering these questions. Tomorrow it may be preventing you from getting Ebola virus.
Dr. Herbert, are you conspiring with the No On Two campaign at all? Direct question.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Are you conspiring with the No On Two campaign?
Am I conspiring with the No? I'm not conspiring with anybody. I do not have an interest in a marijuana club, and I have read the medical literature. I have the reports from the United States government, from the United Nations, and have tried to get the most objective evidence. I have seen reports from those who are opposed to marijuana and write from that perspective, but I have not included that in any of the material that I've quoted or that I've submitted.
Well, I was at the last hearing, and I was at this, I am at this one, and it just really feels like the deck is stacked against the yes people. Every time anyone that's voting yes has asked you a question, you don't have any answers. But every time she asked you a pre-scripted Q&A question, it seemed like you had all of that to back you up. So my next question is for the audience. Does anyone else here feel the same? Okay, so several people are clapping right now. Is there any way we can find another doctor to chime in if we can't get this guy out? Is there anywhere we can find another doctor that the crowd, the audience, the people might feel a little more comfortable about the information they're receiving?
Let me just state this, okay? We have asked the state's chief medical officer to provide information when requested. I sent a memo. It was very clear rules that I believe he has followed, which is to provide answers when requested. I will tell you that if you have a doctor or medical advice that you would like to bring to the record, we will put it on the record, number one. And we already have several studies provided by the yes side on this. The second is, if there are other medical questions that you'd like to be raised for the record, I'm happy to put them on the record, but I'm not here to provide additional folks. I'm going to defend Dr. Herbert. Dr. Herbert has a very important job for all of us. I mean, one day he may be advising on clean water. One day he may be helping us fight suicide in the state. One day he may be helping us get kids vaccinated properly to prevent breakouts in our schools. And he has taken a lot of time to look at drug literature, and I will tell you that there is a lot of literature there, and he has answered this to the best of his ability. And in some cases, his answers, I believe, support one side, and in some cases, I believe his answers support the other, but we've asked him to tell the truth. And if you have ways that you'd like to answer his questions with something else, we'll go ahead and do that. But, That's my answer. I'll stand behind the fact that we brought experts to the table, and I fought hard to be able to do this in these sets of hearings on all three initiatives we're doing this year, because last 2 years ago on Coastal Zone we weren't able to do that, and the legislature decided to fund the participation of state agencies on this, and we've done it in an impartial manner.
Well, I appreciate you holding all of these public hearings and allowing all of us to come out and hear what the people in charge of deciding how this is going to go have to say and sure. Where they're coming from. And I think what's really exciting about everything is the fact that Alaskans are finally looking past the fear-mongering that the big alcohol No On Two campaign has been shoving down our throats from the beginning. And now that we know that the deck is clearly stacked against the yes On Two group, the Alaskans with common sense that are fighting for their rights and their liberty and their freedom. I just hope that every Alaskan will go and look into everything on their own. Don't just use what someone, regardless of who it is telling you is right. Just go and find your own information and make sure that it makes sense to you. That's it.
Thank you.
I realize that, Ms. Green, first of all, I appreciate that you've had your comments. Everybody has that right, and that's why we live in a democracy. And that's the beauty that we don't live in other countries where we wouldn't be allowed to do this. As the new face of the Yes on 2 campaign, I realize that you feel very passionate about this. But accusing the No on 2 campaign of being alcohol-funded is not only misleading, but a lie. Anyone can go to the Alaska Public Offices Commission and look at who has donated to our campaign, and we have not received any funds from any alcohol industries or businesses. I think it's fair to say that while both sides are very passionate about the issue, we do have something in agreement, Ms. Green, and that agreement is that people should look at the source and not just believe what you hear from somebody else. So I would encourage everyone to read the actual measure in the full language, because even today, the proponents of the measures couldn't have answers to their own measure, because the language is difficult to understand, because the language is going to be confusing, and because the language brings a lot of concerns that have nothing to do with medical marijuana, that have nothing to do with decriminalization, and has much to do with big profit and recreation. So please read it by yourself. Thank you.
Senator Governor, may I also offer some comments?
Yeah, Bruce, if you could try to limit so we can get through the list, but go ahead.
Okay, I just want to correct something Eric mentioned. I appreciate Charlene's comments and her enthusiasm for some Prop 2 passed me, obviously. I share that as an individual citizen. She has every right to bring her thoughts forward for the record in this process. The campaign as such has other spokespeople at an official level. I do want to say, though, that I correct something that Charlene said. The power that be in this discussion of the voters of Alaska.
Yeah.
On November 4th, we are the ones who decide whether this thing goes forward. This process is all about people on both sides of the discussion to present arguments for and against. And I think it's incumbent on us to present those lucidly and in a civil manner and in a compelling manner, because ultimately I do think that passing ballot measure 2 is a rational and reasonable way to go. And I think the Alaska voters will see it that way.
Thank you.
I think this is about the right hat for me. Hello, Mr. Treadwell, Mr. Granero, Chairman. I'm grateful for the chance to be able to speak a few words. I live in Wasilla.
Gretchen, could you say your name for the record?
It's Gretchen Omar. And I have other things I want to say, but I'm going to start with, but I think the medical issue, I feel really bad for the people that have problems, but every morning when I get up on this side of the grass with snow, I'm happy. I have 2 or 3 chronic conditions, too. By the time you're young, almost everybody has something that marijuana might help, if you say that, as far as your health, because everyone has health problems. And I think it's a red herring. I think it's a distraction. I think growing hemp for paper is a distraction from the main issue that's going on here. There have been a lot of studies, lots of research to settle the question whether marijuana is harmful to your body. Accusations of finger pointing on both sides regarding the validity of the studies. So I'm not going to talk about the studies. I'd like to mention one of the factors that's the actual firsthand reports of those who witnessed the effects of marijuana. First of all, I don't like stereotyping, the insinuation that all of a certain group are a certain way. I worked hard to make sure my children were not taught to be stereotyped people, and I think I did a pretty good job. I had one daughter married to a man from Mexico, one from a man from Egypt, another daughter married to a British citizen from Cameroon originally. So we have always taught our family, and a lady even asked me, how did you get your family to be so cosmopolitan? I didn't. I just taught my kids not to stereotype any particular person. However, that being said, how do stereotypes come into being? Why can comedians get up and make thousands of dollars making a joke about certain things? Everyone laughs if there weren't certain stereotypes. Otherwise, they'd stand there and tell their joke, and it would just fall flat, and everyone would sit there and say nothing. Obviously, there are certain stereotypes and certain behaviors. There are also advertising. Advertising would make the millions they make if there wasn't certain ideas in people's minds and certain stereotypes. My husband gets angry at the stereotypes of men being stupid when they have commercials on that. So there are some stereotypes there that we get. So how did we get some of the stereotypes that we get about marijuana users? I'm sure a lot of people are not that way. Please don't trip my remarks that everyone feels that way. However, I can't imagine anyone in this audience that doesn't know somebody has messed up their brain on pot. And everybody, we all have a problem with it, and I'm not saying they're all that way, but we don't need to be more unmotivated and dependent on society people in our country. We just don't. And heavy pot users that I have met, all in a group, think they're more intelligent than everyone else, and they're less.
Thank you. Sarah Eaton is next.
I have to say, I totally disagree with you. I am a medical marijuana user and have been for 9 years because of breast cancer. I smoke every day, all day long. I'm an accountant. I run numbers all day long. I think that the information in your speech was completely, it's off track and reefer madness. 100%. Today and hearing that you smoked weed, that's this needs to happen. I think that it is great that it's going hopefully to happen because I can't smoke. I have asthma, so I can't smoke. I can't find any medical marijuana that is edible. And I'm not a good baker. I've tried to make the butter. I've tried to do the stuff. I can't do it. I've tried to find distributors in Seattle, California. There is no place for me to legally buy my products. I hope this goes through. I hope that we open dispensaries because it's been hell for me to try and find my medicine. The government wants to put me on 35 synthetic pills when I can take one marijuana compared to 35 that my doctor's going to put me on. And marijuana will cure all of my issues by one thing. And it doesn't hurt me. It doesn't kill my brains. I graduated with a 3.85 from college. Look, raised 5 children and battled breast cancer. So I really do hope this goes through, and I hope that we have a means to regulate it, and I agree with both sides, and I don't want my kids to have their hands on it. That's why I've chosen not to grow it for myself, because I have a 15-year-old son, and he's at a very impressionable age, even though he knows I smoke marijuana, and that I do ingest it. He knows this. He knows it's my medicine, but I don't want to grow plants where he could possibly go in and steal it from me, because that's what happens. They steal our liquor. If it's accessible to them in our homes, they take it. That's how it is. I have a safe. I keep my medicine locked in so my children can't get to it. But I want to have other forms to be able to do besides just smoking it. I want to be able to eat the gummy bears. But I agree, gummy bears probably aren't the best one because they do target. But you know what? Camel did that a while ago, too, with their Camel Box and Joe Camel. Marlboro's done it, too. The alcohol industry, Captain Morgan's, you know. There's the chocolates, yeah, that you can get every year at Costco. You know, there's so many forms of alcohol and cigarettes that are accessible to our children, and I just hope that this goes through, and I pray, and I hope we all vote yes. Thank you.
Prayers are always with you in your fight against cancer.
I'm 9 years now, so, and I've got a cup.
Thank Frank Ferrari is online. Frank, we're going to put the microphone close to this, and we have about seven others who've asked to testify online, and then we'll conclude the hearing.
Hello? Can you guys hear me? Hello, my name is Frank Berardi, and I'm the chairman of the board of the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. It's been difficult for me to hear part of the conversation today, but I'm pretty sure Eric is the name of the person, one of the guys who is opposing us. Am I correct in that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, my question for Eric is concerning the Rocky Mountain High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Report. we see that law enforcement makes money in a lot of cases from seizing assets due to marijuana crimes. We also see that they make money off of citing and arresting people for marijuana, even when they don't seize property in the form of grants. So my question is, how can we trust a source that is funded by law enforcement agencies when it contradicts other sources like the Center for Disease Control and the Colorado Department of Health, who both released studies that show opposite results? Hello?
Hello?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Hold on. Can you hear Kiki's answering your question?
Sure. No, no, I couldn't hear after I finished answering.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can kind of hear you, yes.
Okay. What I was saying is that in regards to whether you can trust a report from law enforcement or not, I mean, that's a personal opinion that some people might say, I don't trust the government, period, or I trust law enforcement. I mean, they're doing their job. They're the ones that the traffic fatality scenes and trying to rescue you when your building is on fire after hash explosion. But aside of that, the Colorado Public Health Department has figures from an optional survey that is done every other year and that doesn't have information of all the counties, and it hit the largest two counties in Colorado. That means the largest two school districts, and not to mention that these are optional surveys that only took a sampling from students. So the number there might not necessarily be accurate to determine use because, one, they don't show every year, and two, they see a large portion of the population. And so
I can't hear again. Cut out.
Mountain Report is one, but there's also the announcement.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Oh, we can hear you. He's trying to speak.
The U.S. survey on...
Hello?
They also keep track of statistics in all the states and nationally.
I cannot hear at all.
Okay, Mr. Roddy, we had, in the middle of this hearing, one speakerphone break down and the citywide service breakdown, and... Mr. Cordero has provided an answer about a number of different law enforcement efforts. It will go on the record. And Eric, why don't you come over here and sit near that so he can hear you? But we've got a lot of people in another hearing to start.
Sir, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, what I was saying is that in regards to opinions on law enforcement, that varies per person, and I cannot answer that, but the Colorado Health Department has data that is incomplete from all the counties and that is not done every single year. And so the Rocky Mountain Report has yearly data that reports from all the counties and also takes into consideration the national or U.S. survey on health and drugs, which also has yearly data. So it's a combination of more than just one source.
Okay, but the counties that it did keep track of showed a continuing downward trend, correct? Hello?
Yes. For the optional survey, yes. But again, it's not a scientific survey when it's external, and it's the two largest portions in the state.
So now tell me which surveys are not optional, because my educational background tells me that all surveys, by definition, are optional.
The Rocky Mountain Report has actual raw data from law enforcement and emergency services. So those are not surveys. Those are just statistics from hospitals, emergency rooms, fire service, emergency services, information from school districts. Even here in our own school district, if a child is found with marijuana possession, the first thing that the school district does is call the police. Of course, the information of the child is not presented because he or she is a minor, but there is a record, and that record is kept. So that's just from my experience having been on the school board.
Okay, so what about the financial interest from law enforcement, as I discussed, the equitable sharing program, which allows law enforcement to divert funds from the general fund, hand them over to the federal government for an 80% return in their own budget? Or how about low-level offenders with nothing for law enforcement to seize being arrested and having and having their statistic go towards gaining grant money for that law enforcement organization? Wouldn't you say that creates a conflict of interest when they're putting out research to support their own financial best interests?
I don't really think qualified to answer that question. I think I'm going to ask the Lieutenant Governor to ask Mr. Casanova or somebody from the state to answer the question.
Hello?
Maybe will the police get more money for training? Maybe. I mean, it's just a question that has nothing to do with the measure.
It does, because the measure will prevent law enforcement from seizing people's assets, like their home and their car and their money, for marijuana crimes. It has everything to do with this initiative.
Thank you, Mr. Berardi. There is a provision about seizure in this initiative. I'm not sure it affects the federal relationship on seizure, however, but I can tell you we have not had a discussion with law enforcement here about conflict of interest on this, and you know, I can tell you personally, I've never been a big fan of our seizure laws, but that has nothing to do with this. Let me ask Rachel Petro to testify. All online, Rachel. Ryan Lasher in Anchorage. Nicole Esterbrooks, Easterbrook.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I would like to start by saying or agreeing that prohibition does not work. I am for the decriminalization of the use, sale, and distribution of marijuana for adults. But why should we choose to play by the rules set out in front of us with this initiative? If this bill was really for the people, then there wouldn't be a stipulation about which part of the cannabis plant can be used. The elephant in the room is industrial hemp. Alaska has perfect conditions to grow hemp. Alaska should strive for financial independence through the decriminalization of marijuana and the legalization of industrial hemp. Taxes paid to Alaska, not the IRS. Why aren't we encouraging everyone to grow hemp or cannabis? Industrial hemp and medical marijuana will save the world if we let it. This plant can bless us with clothes, paper, diesel fuel from the hemp seed, medical benefits, textiles, and plastics, benefits for the environment, to name a few. Is this initiative a stepping stone, or is it just giving the dog a bone?
Thank you. Is that a question directed to any? I'm just, okay. Danny Bickford from Yes On Two. Danny, don't hear you. Rhonda Hubbard and Seward.
Yes. Do you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Okay. Yes, this is Rhonda from Seward, and I have a couple questions for...
Hello? Danny, if that's you, we'll get back to you. Let Rhonda Hubbard go forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question for Dr. Herbert, Enforcement and the Department of Revenue. Firstly... Dr. Herbert, are you aware of the cumulative effects of THC versus alcohol and how it is accumulated in the body. And can you comment on that?
So this is Dr. Ward-Hurlbert. From my reading, the THC remains in the blood for much longer than alcohol does. The body does not clear it. It may remain in there, the comments from my reading, that a month later you will find detectable levels. As far as the impairment, the objective impairment from the use of THC, from my reading, seems to be more over a few hours, so that after 6 or 8 hours or so from moderate use of the THC, probably the impairment is cleared, but it can be found in your blood for much longer than that.
So I guess I was also curious about alcohol. Is it more, it goes to the body versus actually being accumulative in the cells? You after an hour of, say, a glass of wine or so, it's maybe less detectable. And is that?
Yes. It depends on how much alcohol you ingest, but the body does clear it. And so normally done either the blood test or the breathalyzer test after a period of sufficient hours would be cleared from the blood, and those tests would not find it there.
Okay. And then are we able to label the, like we do with alcohol, we have alcohol percentages that – are we going to be able to do that possibly with THC at some point?
I believe that's a kind of a theoretical question, but my personal answer would be I believe we will. However, we do not have that information yet. And in my reading, in comparing the impairment from a 0.08 blood alcohol to cannabis use, the comments are that within a range of 1 to 4 nanograms, you would have a comparable impairment. Well, that's a fairly wide range still, and we do not have that, from my reading, documented as well as we do with alcohol at this point. But with the increasing use of marijuana and the interest in this topic by law enforcement agencies and others, people do write about it, and I believe, and this is subjective now, I believe that will come.
Okay, so for the question for enforcement is are we able or not to effectively detect the marijuana levels in people when they're driving in case of to detect that they're intoxicated from marijuana while driving?
Major Casanovas.
Yes, Lieutenant Governor. I'll attempt to answer that. To answer the question as to whether or not we're able to do that in the field, the answer is no. There is a, however, if an arrest happens or consent is obtained or a search warrant is obtained and a sample of the subject's blood is obtained and submitted to a lab, then the lab will have ability of knowing what the content is of the blood. From there, it will be determined whether the prosecutor's office will proceed and whether or not there's sufficient evidence for conviction in court.
Okay, and a question for Department of Revenue and the authors of the initiative is, how can we guarantee tax revenues from marijuana if this goes through will go towards paying additional regulatory enforcement and health and social service costs?
I think as the Lieutenant Governor answered earlier, there is no dedicated fund, and so that would be up to the legislators to determine where that money is spent.
Okay. I just want to remind people that in the tobacco, we had to actually file a lawsuit, I believe.
I'm sorry, I had to switch phones to get those funds to be applied towards counter media and education. I will go ahead and go on with my testimony. There's a lot of comparisons between alcohol and marijuana, and I think what I liken them to the fact they're both consequential,
And it's just that alcohol consumption, I liken it to as being more overt and akin to the sins of omission, whereas negative outcomes of pot are more covert and akin to sins of omission. And I think that came out in the Anchorage hearings where it seemed like respect was omitted from the yes side substantially. The actions all might look different, but the results are both are eventually consequential. We are able to see more of the consequence of alcohol because it is legal. It's out there in the open. And this does give merits to the argument of getting pot also out in the open. But and we can therefore qualify its medicinal and safe byproduct uses, as well as quantify the social costs like we currently do so with alcohol already. However, I don't disagree that there's current laws that do need repair and are somewhat contradictory to allowed use. However, this all can be done through a more cautionary approach than through this aggressive industrialization prospect that this initiative suggests. And I do respect those that are finding relief for pain or whatever they use it for medicinal uses. I don't know if they're actually kind of find an ongoing need for it or they're able to eventually get off of it or if they even care to get off of it. I would like to know from that respect. When I hear people are on it for 9 years, I was like, wow, is that the way it is? Is it just become an addictive substance for them or how? I also wanted just from my own personal testimony, unlike previous testifiers who have told their story and have had positive experiences, they seem to be very high functioning. I have had a very different experience. I own 3 businesses that operates in the commercial fishing industry and a service company in Prudhoe Bay. We drug test for, we're mandated to drug test for our workers that work up in Prudhoe Bay. And it's especially comforting for me as a business owner because I'm not there on the site, and it's another safety measure. And currently we have, I have family member that is enduring 3 insurance claims on a fishing vessel now because of those uses of marijuana. I've also had a family member that was addicted to it, had to go to rehab, and I've been to Marijuana Anonymous meetings, and their stories are just as bad or as what you would get in at a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But I admire their admittance, and those that say that it's not addictive are not it's not truthful for everybody like that. So, I will wrap up my testimony here. On the choice of freedoms, I have to say my freedoms are impeded upon daily, too, and it'll especially be when I have to walk through marijuana smoke as I did in Seattle, and or whether it be tobacco smoke or even advertising as I do today with alcohol, seeing that and my kids being exposed to that. Yeah, what's that going to look like for marijuana next? So that ends my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Danny Bickford, I'm going to come back to you real fast, and we got 2 others after that who've indicated, and I don't see Ron Peterson here. I said that he could speak afterwards, but go ahead, Danny.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Terrific. Well, thank you. My name is Danny Bickford, and just to disclose up front, I am the field director for the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. So I'll try to make it short. I have a 10-month-old daughter. As I've probably said before, many of us parents are being told that legalizing marijuana will send a poor message to our children, that it being legal will impress a shocking hypocrisy on all of them. Well, you know what I plan on telling my daughter, myself, as a young woman who's been around alcohol in Alaska and has seen the effects of the culture that condones it? You know how it goes. People who abuse alcohol can turn into walking, breathing safety hazards. They may not mean to cause harm. The likelihood that they're doing so increases drastically when they overconsume. I plan on telling my daughter that when she comes of age, that if she is in a situation where people are choosing to consume, that it's safe to be around people who are consuming marijuana and alcohol. And I know that some people may be horrified at that notion. That doesn't matter to me. If my daughter is in a situation like that, Someone who's consumed marijuana is not going to harm her, won't beat her and leave her somewhere to be found, will not be sexually assault, they will not sexually assault her and leave scars for decades. They will not compromise her safety. If I had a shocking double standard that marijuana has been labeled as being a degenerate drug when alcohol abuse prompts far more degenerate behavior on a massive scale, but it is acceptable to so many. And I remember so often hearing as a young woman with a busy social life that included going to bars with friends that a man misbehaving under the influence of alcohol was just drunk and that I should forgive his transgression into my physical space. I've never forgiven any of those transgressions caused by alcohol. I've never had to be in a position to forgive anyone who's consumed marijuana and been around me because none of those individuals have ever compromised my safety. So if others want to talk about sending messages to children, let's be honest. The message we're sending now is that it's okay to consume alcohol and hurt people because it is legal. And we wonder why we have such a problem in Alaska with incidences that involve alcohol as a factor. Alaska just obtained the deadly designation of being the state the highest number of women killed by men annually. This is wrong, and alcohol is a factor, and no one can deny that. And I'm running short on time, but I also wish to add that I proudly voted no on one in August because I believe in encouraging industry to come to Alaska to develop our natural resources. We depend on the oil industry, the vast majority of which are from out of state, to harness our oil to create the vast majority of our state budget to cope with the unique challenges the Last Frontier faces in our place in the United States and in the Arctic. Let's remember that we should all buy Alaska grown. And guess what? The alcohol industry is already here, and a lot of it is from out of state and causes hordes of problems for Alaska, as I've already mentioned. But I'm wondering who's calling them to task for their social responsibility if we're going to make statements about industry and motivation. And I just want to add that I have many dear friends whom I love very much who are opposing this. We may not see eye to eye on this, but we still love each other, and I do not believe the way to change hearts and minds is to be cruel or rude. So please think before you speak, no matter what you believe. You are an ambassador of your point of view, and the way that you change minds is through hearts.
Danny, I have to respectfully cut you off and move on. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Jess Gondick, are you still on from Valdez?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Please speak up.
All right. Well, my name is Jess Gondick. I'm from Valdez. I'd just like to say right off the bat that my views do not represent those of my employer. Just a little bit about myself real quick. I'm a police officer. I've worked as a police officer for 10 years, and at the risk of becoming quite unpopular with my colleagues around the state, I'm speaking out in favor of this ballot measure for several reasons. I've through my professional and personal experience, I've seen that marijuana prohibition in the state doesn't work. It's a failing proposition, if you will. I think that Alaskans are responsible enough to make decisions on how they medicate or recreate. I think that it's time that we allow them legally to do that. A little bit about, I've heard a lot about DUI and impaired driving, and I can tell you that I've seen very few of these incidents that can be attributed to strictly cannabis as being the single cause of impairment. I hear a lot of concerns about concentrates that are made with butane, such as BHO, shatter. And this process, it's inherently hazardous just because of the substances used. But, we don't regulate the fueling of boats. We don't regulate, camp stove fuel and stuff of that nature, which, contains, I've seen several incidents in the past couple of years down here with boat explosions. Where people have been harmed. I have not seen BHO incidents yet. In terms of the traffic fatality statistics, I think that they can be misleading because the testing is done after the fact. The testing reveals metabolites of cannabis, and it's not generally an indicator of impairment at the time. And in terms of the ACOP report, I'd like to speak just a little bit about that. There are a lot of numbers in this report, and I don't know necessarily how they came about. I don't know how much time was spent. A lot of them seem...
For those of us who don't know what ACOP is, which is the ACOP report?
I'm sorry?
That's the Alaska Chief of Police report?
Yeah, the Alaska Association Chiefs of Police. They came out with this, you know, the 14 reasons against marijuana legalization. I think that it's just my personal opinion that the numbers are a little, they seem inflated to me. I don't know, but I see over and over again, I hear about the need for training. You know, we already receive training on how to detect impaired driving, whether it be alcohol, drugs, or cannabis. So I don't know, you know, where these numbers are coming from. And, you know, at the risk of, you know, putting myself out there too much, you know, I know budgets are a concern for police departments. And I think naturally, you know, the police would want a bigger training budget. So why not throw a bigger number out there? I think the measure is good for us. I think that, you know, even in light of Raven versus Alaska, we still see a wide disparity in how different jurisdictions prosecute cannabis possession, growing, and things of that nature. And I think this ballot measure would help bring that into more of a fair and, well, it wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be in existence anymore, obviously. But I think that's a problem right now. And just to end, I want to say that, you know, these cannabis people that use cannabis, they're our friends, neighbors, and relatives. And I think that for us to demonize a particular group of people that choose to use a certain substance for medicine or recreation, I think it's wrong. I think it's something we really need to take a look at, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. The last person who had signed up to speak before deadline was Deborah Kirk. Deborah, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
And you've got 3 minutes or questions if you have them.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Deborah Kirk, and I'm calling from Kodiak. I'm a single mother of two boys, now 21 and 18. I poured much of my energy for all their young years into helping them lead strong, motivated, curious, intelligent, and successful lives, leaving no room for and making wide berths around the high lifestyle of those who use marijuana. And on an island which often has much less to offer than larger towns, that effort was often a major challenge. But it has been rewarding in that they haven't spiraled into a life of drug use that is so sadly not uncommon on Kodiak Island and many other towns in Alaska. Yes, marijuana has always been available here. Kids tell me it's easy to get. Easy to get for them, but it's not easy for many parents to keep their kids off of it, especially those who have to work long hours and have little help with child rearing. What happens outside their doors can either be a help or a hindrance. If recreational marijuana becomes legal, then it will become undeniably more accessible and make the job of keeping our children clean much harder. Unfortunately, movies, music, and the media in general make marijuana use hopelessly appealing to almost all kids so that the age of 21 becomes pretty meaningless and arbitrary. For those parents who have young children and don't see the harm of another supposedly safe substance being in circulation in our society, just wait a few years until you hit adolescence with your children. Believe me, the trials of juggling sports lessons, homework, dinner time, and even split family custody will seem like a cakewalk. Add drugs into the mix, and marijuana is a drug, and you are in a whole different ball game. Legalize the substance and double the job of the parent. No one I know wants their child to use marijuana. What most parents also know intuitively, and science has only confirmed in the last 10 years, is that kids' brains aren't done growing until the mid-20s. Car insurance companies had this figured out long ago. A collaborative study done between Northwestern Medicine and Massachusetts General Hospital / Harvard Medical School was published April 16 of this year in the Journal of Neuroscience. What it shows is that the degree of brain abnormalities in key areas relating to emotion and motivation is directly related to the number of joints a person smoked per week, in some cases only one or two. One author of the study described it this way: these are core fundamental structures of the brain. They form the basis for how you assess positive and negative features about things in the environment and make decisions about them. So to me, this provides proof of what I have heard from many other parents whose kids have long since begun to use marijuana. It's a demotivator, among other things. And for all of those who think its use hasn't affected them, based on these studies, I'd say you might not realize what potential you've lost. One of the ways I've helped to guide my children is to be a frequent volunteer in their schools. If anyone follows school politics, you would know that collectively, All schools nationwide are and have been for some time now expected to constantly increase student achievement. The words Common Core here might ring a bell. Apparently, as a nation, we are falling behind other countries in test scores, and Alaska is no different. We here must also find a way to teach our students more. So at a time when the amount of information schools must teach to students is increasing very fast, does it make sense to legalize and make more available a substance that promotes the likelihood that the exact opposite will happen in about 20% of our student body?
Deborah, I need to tell you you're past your 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're through the list of people who've committed to testify. Mr. Peterson, I told you at the end, if you had another question or last comment to make, I'd...
Okay, I'm concerned about...
Please just go to the mic and see if you can limit that to less than a minute.
I saw it addressed earlier with that one fellow that talked too long. Licensing. Referendum is really big on licensing. I doubt like hell I'm going to get one, you know. And they're going to be very lucrative, worth millions of dollars. I subscribe to David Stockman's Contra Corner. You know, he was Office of Management and Budget under Reagan. And even he is out in Colorado looking to invest millions and millions of dollars. So it's... what are going to be the provisions for licensing? I mean, if licensing was clear, I'd be yes for two, but because licensing is unclear and I doubt that they're ever going to give me one, I'm going to be forced to vote no, and that's where I stand.
Thank you. As we wind up this hearing, I guess there's a couple of things. If Major Casanovas is on... Actually, this is more for the Department of Health. We did say we're going to try to get on the record information about the DEA list, and we did say we're going to try to get on the record the procedure that might allow the pharmacy board to allow the sale of medical marijuana, just to understand what the legal constraints are at present, whether they're legal or political. I know there's been a lot of discussion back and forth about whether or not regular marijuana use has an effect on brain development. Dr. Herbert, or if you're online, and I'll say this to both sides, in the slideshow that the con side has given on this, there's been a slide with some MRIs on this, and I don't know if the pro side has looked at those or has an alternative there, but the studies on regular marijuana use and the effects on the physical side of the brain, that's been passed over in the hearings, but it's in the slide. And I'll just say this, not arguing one side or the other. If there's an answer to that, or we wanted to take some time in the Fairbanks hearing or the Bethel hearing to just go over that part, it might be useful, because we've had lots of statements saying there is no effect, and there have been some pictures shown that look at some effect. I can tell you I've been at UCLA where there have been studies of people with alcohol, people with marijuana. I've seen some physical effects, and I'm not going to say that. For me, that's not necessarily affecting how I might vote personally, but I think it's important to explain that slide that's been up. So, Dr. Herbert, if you have a suggestion on that, Mr. Empert, if you've got some suggestions on that, I think it would be something explanatory that's come up at every single hearing.
If I may just address that, there are some medical professionals associated with the Prompt 2 campaign, the Yes on Duke, who we might encourage to show up in Fairbanks hearings and offer some testimony.
And we'll get that on the web for everyone who is interested. I want to first off, finally, just thank our hosts, thank all of you for your patience being here today, and congratulate you for the civility that characterized today's hearing, which I think was very positive. Thank you all very much.
Can I ask a question to law enforcement? One
thing coming up. Mr. Coons, your question, yes. Yeah, Major Casanovas, are you still online?
Lieutenant Governor, yes, I am.
Thanks.
We've talked about testing for marijuana blood draws. In the field, and I've been a security, I was
where the gate guards at Elmendorf for several years, so I know about FSTs. Does law enforcement use the same FST testing for the eye testing as well as the balance testing, slurred speech, all those things for marijuana, same thing as in alcohol? Because that's in the field. That's because you can also draw blood on a person for alcohol as well later on.
If I understand the question correctly, are we using the same field sobriety tests for people suspected to be under the influence of marijuana as we are for alcohol and or any other drug? And the answer is the Alaska State Troopers are, yes, using the exact same field sobriety test.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Empert?
Are illegal
right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for correcting the record. Rhonda, you got a question? Go ahead.
Are you aware of the Ultimate User Act and the federal law?
Could you repeat that, please?
Are you aware of the Ultimate User Act under federal law?
No, ma'am, I'm not.
The law, I believe, states that anybody who, the ultimate user of a controlled substance is a person who's lawfully obtained that controlled substance, that it can be used by that person, any member of that person's family, or any animal owned by that person or a member of their family. And I believe that's current federal law today. So where people are being told...
I've lost it here.
Yeah, I lost it too.
Lieutenant Governor, I cut out a little while ago, and I think the two requests, one was on the Drug Enforcement Agency and the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and I did leave a voicemail message for that section chief to verify what I said or expand on it. And the other were the anatomic changes in the brain. Was there anything else you'd wanted me to get?
Dr. Hurlburt, I think we've maybe been disconnected again.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Is anybody still there, or is the meeting over?
SUM comments at alaska.gov. You can find comments in the record, and receive some notes on some other studies that will be provided for the website at notice.alaska.gov. You can join our hearing by telephone in Bethel on Monday, or be in Bethel on Monday from 12 to 2, and by calling the Legislative Information Office at 855-463-5009, or you can join our hearing on this matter in Fairbanks at the Assembly Chamber 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, September 30th, and we will have another hearing in this room at 4 o'clock on the minimum wage initiative. God bless you, and thank you all for your time. Thank you.